brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Going to be talking around the debate in just in a couple of minutes. Biden and Ryan going to be going toe-to-toe. A couple of things we're going to want to talk about before that happens. I'm excited. I'm interested. I want to see where this goes, and I'm hoping, I got to be honest, I'm hoping Biden cleans his clock, slaps that smarmy little grin off of his face. But, you know, that's just me. Never mind. But we're going to talk about that. Pretty much most of the time I talk with people about, you know, some of the things Romney has said, some of the things he's said but not done anything on, like, oh, I don't know, getting tough. China, you talk good game, you know, throwing a lot of words out there, but when he doesn't seem like an action kind of guy. And, you know, trade is something we really need to be working on. And you look at the trade deficit numbers are in. And as I've been saying for the longest time, I'm not so worried about our budget deficits, not so worried about our national debt. I am worried about our trade deficits. And you're looking at, so far this year, almost $500 billion in things that we've bought from other countries that they haven't bought from us. So that means almost $500 billion has left the country, sitting in the hands of foreign countries, foreign corporations that eventually have to come back here. And what's it going to do? It's going to buy us. And in the month of August, we had a trade deficit with the rest of the world of $44.2 billion. That's billion with a B. And of that $44.2 billion, $28.7 billion of that with just the Chinese alone. And I look at this debate, and I'm hoping there are some questions coming up. I'm hoping that the moderator will ask about our trade deficit, because to me that is the big issue. You know, what are you going to do to prevent jobs from fleeing this country? What are you going to do to stop our tax dollars from funding that? What are you going to do to support strong trade enforcement? What are you going to do when a country like China cheats? What are you going to do? And, you know, just a blatant, right-out question that I've been asking for the longest time. You know, do you believe that our trade deficit is a national security issue? Do you believe that the loss of jobs, the loss of manufacturing, do you believe that that is a national security issue? Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, someone asks that question. And while Pizza Hut, I guess, is, you know, running a campaign, if anybody asks, you know, Obama or Romney pepperoni or sausage, I want somebody to stand up going, hey, trade deficit, China, what are you going to do? So for Biden tonight, he's got to get out, no gaffes. He's got to be aggressive, but he can't be a bully. He's got to hit Ryan hard on Ryan's policies and really then go after the gaping differences between Ryan and Romney. And because to be honest, Romney's all over the place. He's all over the map. Should be able to go after Romney and be able to take some of those shots. And especially when you look at health care. I mean, to me, health care is a big area. Ryan plan, going to kick some 72 million people out, leave them uninsured. Going to kick that 31 million that are getting health care now. Going to do away with that. Done. You know, this is a guy who called Social Security a Ponzi scheme. So seniors, wake up. When he starts talking about Medicare, starts talking about Social Security, he believes it's a Ponzi scheme. Wants to privatize it. And understand, this is a guy who's going to balance his budget, and Romney's going to do the exact same thing off the backs of those least able to shoulder the burden. In fact, I just saw something the other day that said 62% of the budget cuts that Ryan proposed came off of programs that benefit low-income folks. Think about that. Where are the priorities? That's where the priorities are. And we're going to hear a lot about defense cuts. You're going to hear a lot about Obama wants to cut defense. Understand, Ryan voted for those defense cuts that he's blaming Obama for. And on the tax front, I mean, this is important because Romney has said he is going to cut taxes across the board by 20%. Going to cut it on everybody, 20%. But somehow, magically, he's going to lower the deficit. I'm kind of wondering how that's going to happen. Because, well, not going to happen. It just doesn't add up. And I think you're going to hear about the $716 billion, so seniors, look out for that. It's coming. understand that, Ryan wanted to cut that exact same $716 billion, but instead of putting it into funding health care for everybody, what he wanted to do is, well, we're going to pay down the deficit with it. So seniors, you were going to be the ones, if you buy that he was stealing it from you, you were going to be the ones who were going to pay for the deficit and the debt. The reality is this is just closing that Medicare Advantage, the privatized portion of Medicare, which should have never been opened in the first place. We should have left Medicare alone. But, you know, they have to get their, they have to get their ideology in the middle of all programs. And this was purely an ideological poison pill to destroy Medicare. And you look at the fact that a quarter of the seniors are on this Medicare Advantage, the privatized plan, and it costs as much as the traditional Medicare, which covers three quarters of the people for less than the cost of the privatized plan. Think about that for a second. So what we hear tonight, I expect to hear the, you know, Romney, I expect to hear Ryan trying to go after Biden, but trying to be more likable, not trying to be wonky, not trying to be the smarmy little snot that he can be. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, and I'm excited to see it. I think Biden, who is a skilled debater, has done this a number of times, has a little bit of the advantage. But, you know, what they've been doing in the media for the last day and a half is, you know, setting the bar, the whole campaign's on Biden's shoulders, which I find interesting because what they're doing on the other side, well, you know, it's not a big deal. They're kind of tapping down expectations. But understand, in this debate, for me, what I want to hear them go after Medicare. I want to hear them talk about Social Security. I want to hear them talk about tax plans. Because, you know, Ryan said, well, we're not going to go into that. We're not going to give details. I want details. And I want to hear why Romney hasn't released his tax plan. Part of what I want to hear. And also, you know, the tax plan that Romney has come out with and now kind of walked away from and kind of all over the tax cut thing. I want to hear what Ryan has to say. And I don't want to hear, well, that's his position. And that's the top of the ticket's position. You signed on. You buy into it. You bought into this scheme. This is your baby, too. When you signed up, you said, yep, I'm with you, Mittens. We're together on this. So as they push another Bush-style economic stimulus package, which is what it was, they claimed, oh, we're going to create, you know, all these jobs with these huge tax cuts. Didn't happen because it was poorly targeted and given to the wrong people. I want him to explain how the Romney plan, which will double the Bush plan, which is basically Bush tax cuts on steroids, how that's going to create jobs where the Bush plan fell flat on its face. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to the next hour and a half of debate. I'm hoping there'll be some moments of fire, some fireworks, something to talk about. In the third hour, we're going to talk with the folks from Talk Radio News Service who are at the debate tonight in Kentucky. So it should be an interesting evening. Should be worth at least watching and paying attention to. Tonight on the program, we're going to be talking to the congressional candidate Matt Cartwright a little bit later on. Also going to talk with Dave Johnson here in the first hour from the Campaign for America's Future about the Romney China plan. So stick around. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Our message is, listen to your associates. Stop retaliating. We're not trying to shut down this company. We're trying to make it better for ourselves and for our customers.
Evelyn Cruz, one of the Walmart workers who rallied at the company headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas on Wednesday. Walmart workers in six cities, including Los Angeles and Dallas, have walked off their jobs recently in the first ever wave of strikes against Walmart operations. The win by striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois is inspiring other Walmart worker activists like Cruz to redouble their efforts. From the Bentonville, Arkansas rally, Cruz said for most Walmart workers, earning a living is next to impossible due to the part-time status and low wages.
We are human beings trying to take care of our families, trying to make a living for ourselves an honest living, and this company is just not even giving us a chance to earn a living there. It's extremely hard. If you don't have a supportive family, you are not making a living there, let alone trying to support a family.
One U.S. renewable energy industry is getting pinched after losing a tax credit, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. wind turbine industry is starting to feel the impact of Congress not renewing a tax credit that benefits that industry. 75 workers were let go on Tuesday at a blade factory in Colorado. In late September, American Wind Energy Association CEO Denise Bode pled with Congress to renew the credit due to the detrimental impact it would have on well-paying skilled jobs in that industry. Since the credit expired, Siemens has cut nearly 700 jobs, Katana Summit has announced plans to close plants in Nebraska and Washington, and Molded Fiberglass shaved 92 jobs in South Dakota. The tax credit has been credited with helping to provide companies in the wind industry with the ability to create more than 20,000 jobs. Without the credit being renewed, it's projected that just as many jobs as were created will likely be lost. The tax credit expired due to opposition by the Republican Party in the House of Representatives.
American Crystal Sugar has locked out its 1,300 union workers for 14 months now while it makes record profits and its CEO's salary skyrockets. The AFL-CIO has called for a nationwide boycott of American Crystal Sugar to begin October 15th. Here are some of the kids of the locked out workers speaking about the injustice of the lockout.
It's hard because my dad has worked so hard and so has my mom. And just to see somebody be this uncaring of all the families, it's really heartbreaking.
It's been really hard for our family. I wrote in my letter that I hope we get to pay the bills, make sure we keep our house.
I'm only 11 years old and I worry about those things because, well, you just think about it and thinking about it gets you scared and you want to help, but you can't do nothing.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The enterprise has done more to lift people out of poverty, to help build a strong middle class, to help educate our kids, and to make our lives better than all the programs of government combined.
You know, it kind of makes you wonder when he says that how much of the money, the programs that have lined his pockets, how much money has gone into helping him, say, you know, bail out the Olympics that he loves. They run around saying, I saved the Olympics. Yeah, with $2 billion from you and me. What would have happened without that? Don't look behind the curtain. And the reality is, folks, is we're closing in on November 6th, and we need to make sure that everybody gets out to vote, gets to the polls, cast your ballot, and we need to make sure that every one of those ballots are counted properly. And the hope is, at least from where I sit, is that we see President Obama elected, again reelected with a Congress that's at least somebody sane, a little rational, and not prone to these fits of petulant tantrums as we've seen from the Tea Party Congress here recently. My hope is we see people elected who, to those positions who, you know, they actually believe in what they're doing. They believe in that the power of government, what it can do, as opposed to the folks who simply want to destroy government, neuter our ability to respond to crisis or invest in the future, which is why I've asked Matt Cartwright to come talk to us. He's running for Congress here in Pennsylvania. CartwrightCongress.com is the website. Matt, thanks for taking time for me.
How you doing, Rick?
I am good. You know, I look at tonight's debate, and for me, a lot of it is really about, it's about Medicare, it's about Social Security, it's about the things that Paul Ryan wants to neuter and destroy.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that they can't run away from the Ryan budget. We knew that Mitt Romney had endorsed the Ryan budget to begin with. But then when he selected Paul Ryan, its author, as his vice presidential running mate, he doubled down on the Ryan budget. And that Ryan budget, they can't run away from it. You know, one thing that Joe Biden loves to say, and I've become friends with Joe over the years. He's from Scranton, and we've been big supporters of his, my family and I. He loves to say, don't tell me about your values. Show me your budget.
Yep.
And I'll tell you about what your values are. And that's so right. And it so applies to Paul Ryan because he wrote things in that budget that are reprehensible.
Yep.
I mean, he cuts veterans' benefits by 13% in that budget. And what I say is, they need to go back to the drawing board, these Tea Partiers, these right-wing Republicans. They need to go back to the drawing board and decide whether they value American veterans properly or not.
Excellent. You know, and the reality is if you look at his budget, you know, I saw a number, 62% of the cuts that he makes in this budget are from programs that benefit low-income folks. The people at the very bottom, the most vulnerable in our society, that's where he's going to balance his budget off the backs of.
I saw that too, and what I think is, it's kind of dawned on me, Rick. I think there's this climate of contempt for those in poverty, those who are struggling in this country.
They're easy prey.
And that's why you hear things come out from time to time, like the 47% comment from Mitt Romney in an unguarded moment when he didn't realize the cameras were on him. He was among his biggest donors. And he comes out and he says, I don't need to worry about 47% of the country. Well, he's talking about people that don't pay income tax.
Don't pay federal income tax.
So who's he talking about? He's talking about people who are disabled, including people who are disabled veterans who aren't paying income tax, people that, you know, maybe lost a limb in Afghanistan or Iraq. He doesn't have to worry about those people. We're talking about currently serving servicemen.
Yeah.
Don't pay income tax on what they make. He doesn't care about them. It's outrageous for him to say something about something like that. And of course, he's also including anybody who's not paying federal income tax. So we're talking about the poorest Americans. He doesn't care about those people. He doesn't have to worry about their votes. So why should he care about them? And I say that's an outrage. I mean, we shouldn't be talking about sticking up for 1% or 47%. I intend to stick up for 100% of Americans when I go to Congress.
But didn't you know, Matt, that he's now had this grand epiphany? He claims he was wrong, and now he's all better. He's all healed, and he's right with those 47%.
Right. That that was then. This is now.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Matt. I mean, at the end of this, when you look at that statement, you look at the policies that Ryan and the Romney ticket are proposing for the working people of this country, they are not the defenders. I want somebody who's going to stand up and fight for working people. I want somebody who's going to stand up and fight for a decent living wage and respect on the job and fight for Social Security and old age and Medicare so that when you get old, you don't live in poverty and you don't fear getting sick. I want somebody who's going to stand up and say, damn it, I'm the proud defender of the American dream, the American working class.
Well, in that case, Rick, you've dialed the correct number. Because those are the things that I will stand up for. To me, it's outrageous that not everybody feels that way. I can't, you know, when you get right down to it, there's some just plain old selfish people in this country.
Yep.
That don't think about the people who are struggling, the people who need health care, the people who don't have enough to eat. I mean, I live in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Figure just came out, 29% of the children in Scranton live below the poverty level.
Wow.
And that kind of thing makes me angry. I mean, right here in Pennsylvania, we have this governor who cut off direct cash assistance grants. This is a lousy $200 a person.
The general assistance budget.
It goes to about 70,000 people in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
We are, by definition, talking about the neediest people in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And when Governor Corbett decides to cut them off at the knees, I mean, you can't imagine. I mean, $200 isn't much to a lot of people. But when you're talking about the neediest people in our state,
yep.
that's everything to them. To a lot of those people, that's their entire rent. That throws them out on the street, something like that.
Well, I mean, you go through time and time again when Corbett took office, 41,000 low-wage workers who were able to get adult basic, the very minimal health care plan that the state provided for the working poor, kicked them to the curb, 88,000 children off the Medicaid plan. Now you're talking 70,000 that they just eliminated without notice from the general assistance budget. And as you pointed out, the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable, and again, the Republican way seems to be, we're going to make our bones off the backs of those least able to shoulder the burden and take that bounty and give it to the top.
Well, it's not all Republicans. I think it's the right-wing Republicans. There are an awful lot of moderate Republicans. I mean, frankly, in our area, it's a predominantly Democratic area, so the people who are Republicans tend to be the people who wanted to be involved in Democratic politics, but nobody made room for them, so they hopped over and became Republicans. And I know this because I'm getting support from a lot of moderate Republicans who don't like what the right-wing Republicans are doing to their party. So I'm here to tell you, I have some hope for our nation, because if we can cut down on the number of Tea Partiers in the Republican ranks, we might be able to reach across the aisles and get some work done in Congress.
Yeah, and hopefully we elect people who, as I said at the beginning, people who believe in government and believe in the power that it can do, it can invest in the future, and it can make people's lives better, instead of putting people in there who tell you right from the beginning, I don't believe in it, I'm going to destroy it, we're going to neuter it. And is it any surprise that when you elect somebody who says they don't believe in government, that government's a failure, that when they are in charge of it, it fails? Are we surprised at that?
No, that's not a surprise at all. But to me, the surprise is that there are so many people like that. When you boil it right down to the basics, it's whether you believe in America.
Right.
I believe we get America moving again by investing in our infrastructure, by investing in our roads and our bridges and our rail systems and our electrical grid and our internet systems and everything like that. The infrastructure of this country is what makes us competitive and strong. And I say we invest in this country and make ourselves the strongest, the proudest, the most competitive nation in the world.
Absolutely.
Who among us would not want that?
Well, evidently a whole bunch of Republican governors who turned down a bunch of money to build rail systems across their states. Evidently a bunch of these governors who turned down federal money to make sure that their roads and bridges got built, because, you know, I see it all across the country.
It's hard to imagine, but you're right. There are people like that. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that notion that they would reject the building of American infrastructure so that we can remain competitive with China and other countries that are building their infrastructures.
Yep. And you know, the thing that gets me, Matt, and you're listening to the Rick Smith Show, we're at Matt Cartwright. He's a candidate for the 17th Congressional District. The website, CartwrightCongress.com. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. You can get the link there. You know, the thing that gets me is right now we could be borrowing to invest at an extraordinarily low rates, get people back to work, get people paying taxes back, paying our debt and our deficits down. It just seems like the smart thing to do, yet we've got those naysayers and those folks in Congress who I'm hoping are voted out this November saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to follow the austerity measure of cut, gut, and punish and lay more people off in an economy that spirals even further down.
Well, I think the problem is that a lot of people see government budgets, they equate them with the family budget. You know, the family budget, yeah, you have to make ends meet. You have to balance your family budget. Everybody knows that.
Right.
But when you're talking about the government, you know, you're talking about a completely different animal. When the government stops supporting programs things begin to shut down, when the government stops funding public education, all of a sudden those ladders start to go away. You know the ladders I'm talking about,
yep.
The ladders that help the people in the
people
in,
like
in
me.
Poverty pull themselves up into the middle class,
yeah,
the ladders that help the people who are in the middle class climb up and achieve the American dream. When those ladders go away, America gets hurt. America gets hurt in a way that it's hard to recover from, because it's the middle class that has always been the backbone of America. These are the people that think about the American dream. These are the people that drive the American economy. And if you hurt the middle class, you have damaged the backbone of the United States of America.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, I look at the cuts that they're proposing in their budgets and the austerity. In fact, you know, I still remember there were all the Republican candidates during the primary raising their hand that they would turn down a deal for $10 in spending cuts for every dollar in tax revenue that would be raised. And I go, you know, that investment, that $10 that's coming directly out of our economy, going to slow things down, create more unemployment, create more pain and misery. And I say, you know, I'm not there yet. I see what's going on in Europe, and I see what austerity is doing. I don't want to bring that here.
Oh, yeah. Austerity has not worked in Greece. I mean, cutting at a time of economic downturn. I mean, you know what you call that? That's Hooverism.
Yep.
And we learned about that, you know, 80 years ago. It doesn't work.
Right. Now, the people that you're talking to on the campaign trail, do they get this? I mean, are you getting this message that, you know, we need to be investing in infrastructure, we need to be investing in the nation, we can't have these massive fluctuations, these huge cuts? Are you hearing that from folks?
I am, in a manner of speaking. I mean, a lot of it depends on how you describe things. So, for example, here in northeastern Pennsylvania, I talk about the importance of getting passenger rail service restored to our area. We don't have it in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre. We haven't had it since 1970. And passenger rail service is a form of infrastructure that could really help this area, really give this area a shot in the arm,
yep.
And certainly relieve congestion on the roadways. And it's also a green solution. Cuts down on carbon emissions. People like the idea of restoring Amtrak rail service to northeastern Pennsylvania. So when you boil it down to the specifics of what kind of good things infrastructure investment can bring, they like it. Now, it's when you put labels on things. For example, people like it that they're going to be covered even if they have pre-existing health conditions. People like it that you can cover your kids up till when they're 26 years old and can land on their feet. People like it that you can close the Medicare Part D donut hole for seniors' prescriptions. People like it that women are going to be covered for preventative health care. But once you say, well, what do you think about Obamacare? All of a sudden they don't like that.
Yeah, good point.
So it's the Republican spin machine that has really bollocks things up.
Yeah. Let me ask you an important issue in your district, in the 17th Congressional District, this defense bill that Ryan and the Republican Congressman Schuster and Marino and Barlotta all voted for, and then you find out evidently they didn't know that there was going to be $2 billion cut from the depots at Toby Hanna and Letterkamp. Any thoughts on that?
You bet I have some thoughts. I was in a state of utter outrage when I heard that. Actually, the way they put it, Congressman Barletta said he didn't know what was in the
right.
bill when he voted for it. A couple of days later, I think after a lot of people expressed outrage at not knowing what's in the bill you vote for, then Congressman Marino said, well, I did know what was in there, and I think that was the right way to go. So I'm not sure, you know, of the validity of either point.
Yeah, but what's that going to do to your area? I mean, if they cut Toby Hanna, I know that's a huge employer up there. It's a driver of so much industry and so many ancillary jobs surrounding it. What happens if they cut that down?
Well, I want to say this, though, Rick, that the one who figured it out for these congressmen was Senator Bob Casey. He figured out that having voted the way they did, they were going to end up cutting Toby Hanna and Letterkenny. And it's kind of a sad day when the senator has to tell the congressman what's in the bills they vote for. But nonetheless, evidently, that's a salvageable situation, and that can be fixed before it becomes law. But I'll tell you this. Toby Hanna Army Depot is going to be the single largest federal appropriation in my district, in the 17th Congressional District. That means Toby Hanna, that Indian name, is going to be at the top of every whiteboard in my legislative office. Every single bill that comes through is going to be vetted to make sure no cuts are made to Toby Hanna, not just because we want to keep the 5,200 jobs here, but because they do wonderful, excellent work for all of the branches of the armed forces, the communication systems that they build and that they revamp there. They are doing wonderful, patriotic work at Toby Hanna. We just had the 100th anniversary of the opening of the Toby Hanna Army Depot, and what a proud day that was. These people are doing great work, and the very last thing we need to do is even consider cutting any jobs from Toby Hanna.
Yeah, I agree with you. Last line of questioning, you know, as we move towards the election, we've seen a lot of attacks, a lot of assaults on people's right to vote. I want to get your thoughts on one, what they've done here in the state, in the Commonwealth, and two, what people should do to make sure that their vote gets counted and they have access to the franchise.
Well, obviously, Rick, I think you and I agree that voter ID law was nothing but a ham-fisted, blunt attack on the franchise here in Pennsylvania, and they attacked it in a way that they figured would cut down on the number of Democratic voters. And they didn't get away with it, because there are some times when these right-wing Republicans actually go too far for most people. And most people saw, even, you know, Republican judges and justices, they figured out that this is just a bold-faced attempt to steal an election.
Yep.
And who was it that was it Terzai that said
voter ID
so that we could elect Governor Romney as president? Check or done.
Right here.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
There you go. Done.
Yeah. To hear him crowing about it, I mean, that dispelled any doubt whatsoever that's what that was about. And I say thank God for our independent judiciary, and they figured out that was what that was about, and they knew very well they couldn't hold their heads up in public and uphold that law for this November's election.
Yeah, I agree. You know, but the question I keep asking people is, you know, how many bites at the apple do they get? I mean, you remember when they tried to rig the electoral college, where they were, we're gonna allocate electors based on the congressional districts, just because we know that that'll give Romney a couple more votes, and then the gerrymandering of the districts that got thrown out as unconstitutional. Now this, and you throw in Act 13 on top of that. I mean, how many bites of the apple do they get before we realize that these folks, they don't get governing. They do politicking well. They do bumper sticker sloganeering really well, but governing, not so much.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Act 13. There again, that fills me with hope for the future, that we have the independent judiciary and they can look at something like that and decide that needs to be thrown out. I mean, force a takeaway of the rights of local municipalities to decide what kind of protections will be given to the local environment. That was that was ridiculous.
Yep.
The court saw it that way, and the court did away with Act 13, and God bless our independent judiciary.
And good for them. Matt Cartwright, I wish you nothing but the best of luck. Would love to have you back between now and the election. Talk about how things are going. I appreciate your time.
Oh, the pleasure's mine, Rick. Take care now.
Thanks so much. Matt Cartwright, candidate for the 17th Congressional District. Website, CartwrightCongress.com. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Matt Cartwright's name. Take you right there. Quick break. Right back after this.
Changing America for the better.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping, and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com. And take the worry out of tax time.
As they drill for quick corporate profits deep inside our earth, such natural gas frackers as ExxonMobil and Halliburton are not only causing enormous harm to people's health, the environment, and local economies all across the country, but they're also fracking something essential to a properly functioning democratic society. Truth. They are hailing themselves both as exemplars of free market success and as the virtuous ones in our society. The producers and makers, as contrasted to the mass of Americans that the far-right corporatists are now openly calling moochers and takers. The current natural gas boom, the frackers exclaim in a self-serving narrative fabricated by their PR departments and political front groups, is a victory over those wimpy and undeserving producers of wind and solar power who are dependent on government subsidies to get up and running. The shale gas boom, wrote the oil and gas-funded American Enterprise Institute this year, has occurred, quote, away from the greedy grasp of Washington. AEI's laissez-faire fabulous snidely added that surely Washington would have done something to slow it down, tax it more, or stop it altogether had the bureaucrats realized that private enterprise was making such progress. Indeed, crowed an industry PR group, the free market has worked its magic. Sheesh, their BS goes deeper than their fracking gas wells. First, magicians don't perform magic, they do illusions. Second, for three decades, the federal government has pumped more than $100 million into research for the frackers, finding ways to make the technique work. And since 1980, the big bad government they now badmouth has paid frackers more than $10 billion in a subsidy written specifically for them. This is Jim Hightower saying, these oil giants aren't the virtuous ones. They're liars, fracking their own integrity.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone, by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Well, my daddy come on, Neil, how it works when he came home from World War II. Now the yard's just scrap and rubble. He said them big boys did what Hitler couldn't do. Yeah, these mills, they built the tanks and bombs. sons of Korea and Vietnam. Now we're wondering what they were dead for. Here comes
the and welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. You know, every time I hear that song, you know, it just, you know, I go, you, at one time we were the manufacturing king of the world. And it's not like we lost. It's not like we got beat. It's not like we were in the ring fighting and we lost. No, it's not it. We gave it away. With these insane trade deals and all of this, well, all of this corporate control. Where we say, sure, you can take jobs overseas and bring that stuff right back here, tariff-free, without any, well, just like an American product. And the trade that they keep telling us is not really trade, we're just buying stuff we used to make, now it's being made somewhere else. And I look at the trade numbers, like we talked about. $44.2 billion in the month of August alone, almost 29 of that, with just the Chinese. We're $500 billion in trade deficit. Like I've been saying, you want to talk about the real deficit? That's it. That's why I've asked Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future to come talk to us about why is it Mittens running around talking about China when the company that he was the CEO of is, as we speak, shipping jobs to China. Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
You know, I look at this and, you know, I hear Romney, you know, pumping up his chest, you know, doing that. We're number one thing and we're going to go after him. We're going to draw a line in the sand and we're going to hold him accountable. Yet the company that he was CEO of, as we speak, shipping 170 jobs out of this country to China.
Mitt Romney wants to be president of the United States, and Mitt Romney can read polls. And poll after poll, as you know, shows that the public gets it. I mean, polling, or if it's Democrat or Republican, Tea Party, they want to see Made in America. They understand that China's cheating, that something's not right. They understand that the jobs are being shipped out, that the factories get closed down. They send the stuff in the factories over to China, and then they bring the same stuff back here to sell that they made in those factories. Now, that's not trade at all, and people get it. The polling is overwhelming, and Mitt Romney sees that. I almost said Rick Romney.
Yeah, please don't do that.
I'm on the Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Mitt Romney sees that and understands it, so that's what he's got to say if he wants to become president. Doesn't have anything to do with what he might do as president, what he might believe or anything. Nothing he seems to say. I mean, he apparently can say something. He can contradict himself in the same sentence if the people on the left side of the room want one thing and on the right side of the room want the other. Gets away with it somehow.
That's a good point. You know, and the thing is that gets me is, you know, you go back and you look at his time, you know, as CEO of Bain Capital, and they did a lot of this. There are numerous situations where they've shipped jobs out of the country, and for this is just another example of what he set up as the head of Bain Capital being replicated again and again.
We have this deal that has been made with the elites of our country, made with the elites in China, where they will serve up workers for a very low price. People like the Mitt Romneys, you know, the heads of these companies, the finance people will get insanely rich, and then we pack up our factories and we ship them over to China. They get rich. The Chinese strategy continues, and we lose our jobs. We lose our factories. Our country loses key manufacturing ecosystems.
Right.
It's really important to understand that supply chains, ecosystems, that the knowledge, the experience, the people who repair the machines and all of that, when we lose that, it's incredibly difficult to ever get it back. And those are all crucial components of manufacturing. It's an ecosystem. All those components depend on each other. We lose those. The Mitt Romneys get insanely rich from it. China as a country with their strategy comes to increase their power, their standing in the world. Not that doing it the right way is a bad thing, but that this strategy that we're able to just fall into it because a few people get insanely wealthy from it, but then have such influence over our policy. See, you almost got me shouting again, Rick. But here's the thing. We're talking in particular about a company called Sensata, and that's in Freeport, Illinois. And this is one of those companies that Bain bought and immediately announce that they're going to close this factory, take the equipment, ship it to China. Well, this is a key component of the automobile industry
right.
that they're sending over to China. The people who run Bain get really rich. Everybody in Freeport, Illinois is going to be much worse off because these are the best paying jobs in Freeport, Illinois. 170 people are losing their jobs packing that stuff. So what the workers have done is they've set up a camp across from the factory. It's called Bainport. Now, this is Freeport, Illinois. It's called Bainport. And there's just such a story there because these people, you know, you look at them and you're going to see people you know.
Yep.
People you know. These people are just on the edge of losing their jobs, which happens at the end of the month. They're trying to stop those trucks, those Bain trucks going in and out of that factory, moving the equipment. They brought people over from China that they made these people train, that they told them, we're going to be laying you off at the end of the year. We'll give you somewhat of a severance package, but if you don't train these workers and you don't behave, then you don't get your severance package either.
And not only do they not get the severance package, they also, if they get fired and they don't get to collect unemployment, they don't get the trade adjustment assistance at the end either.
Right. That's right. That's so crucial, too. I encourage people to go to Bainport.com. It's Bainport.com. It's a website set up by these workers. The picture's there, the story there. I really encourage it.
Yeah, we'll get a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. But, you know, you look at this Sensata technology, and as you pointed out, this is a key component in the auto parts industry. I mean, this is a key auto parts company. What the Chinese have done, and they've done masterfully, you know, if we're going to let them do it, you got to give them credit for being able to do it. They have targeted certain industries, and right now auto parts are that industry that they're targeting with huge subsidies and land grants and everything that you can imagine under the sun to be able to steal this from us. In fact, they've taken some 300,000 jobs from the U.S. over the last decade in targeting the auto parts industry.
That's just in auto parts. They've taken $5 million in various manufacturing areas. Now, this is so important to understand that as a country now, China will be taking over the auto industry piece by piece if they get away with this, just like they've taken over how many industries can you think of? Electronics manufacturing, one after another. They target key components. They go to the Mitt Romney's. Mitt Romney's current income, he says he's unemployed, is $450,000.
I was going to ask you about that. Does he make any money off Sensata being shipped overseas?
Yeah. He right now owns a bunch of stock in Sensata right now, but his former company, Bain, is the owner of this thing. He still has pieces of all kinds of funds of this. $450,000 a week is his current income, and some of that's Sensata and others, but it's not just Mitt Romney. He's a symbol of it, but the Mitt Romneys get insanely wealthy from this stuff.
Yep.
So they want these things shipped over, and they have enormous influence over policy, so they get rich. But China as a country ends up with these key industries for the long term, okay? People, a few people, we call them the 1% sometimes, they're getting really rich. It's a deal they've struck with China. The rest of the country loses, and the country in the future loses. We lose these industries when this happens. They all talk about things like how, oh, well, you'll be paying less prices because they're made by slaves or whatever, you know, things like that. But we lose high-paying jobs in the United States, but we lose the income. You talked about the trade deficit. Well, think of what that trade deficit is. That is American wealth direct transfer
yep.
to China.
Absolutely.
That's 300 billion more, $400 billion. It's the largest trade deficit between any two countries in the entire history of the world ever, and it just gets bigger and bigger. And every year we transfer wealth. You want to talk about a deficit to worry about. Every year we transfer wealth, and we transfer our ability to make these things in the future. It's an enormous investment to set up. Just think of what's involved in, let's say, setting up a manufacturing facility for, let's say, semiconductor chips. The facility, but beside the facility, you've got to train all the people. You've got to have the school systems that will bring those people in. You've got to have the people that know how to fix the machines. You've got to have the suppliers You lose all of that. Think about what's involved in getting that back.
Yep.
We're trying a piece of that with capturing. We're trying to trigger this kind of ecosystem around what's called green energy in the United States. And you know what? These agents of China, you keep hearing them, they complain about Solyndra. I'm going to just call them that right now because that's essentially what they're doing. We're in a battle to seize a new industry between China, certain European countries and others, and we're trying to get a chunk of that industry here. We're trying to trigger it, and they're doing everything they can to stop us, okay?
Yeah.
That's another example, but it's an enormous, enormous investment that's involved. That once we give these things up, once a Sensata ships the sensor manufacturer to China, we don't get it back.
You're absolutely right. And the question that I have for you then, Dave, is, you know, you see Mitt Romney running around thumping his chest and you're going to hold them accountable and we're going to put America first and, you know, believe in the country and all of the rhetoric that he's throwing out. Why, with this Sensata situation, is he not saying, wait a minute, this is a key component to the auto industry. We need to keep those jobs here. We need to protect manufacturing in the U.S. instead of saying nothing. I mean, he has said, as far as I can tell, not a single word about this yet. This should be something that's front and center on his mind, saying these are jobs we're not going to lose.
We need to put it front and center because this is his opportunity. He shouldn't look at this as some kind of threat. It's an opportunity for Mitt Romney to go to the public and say, see, I mean what I say. I'm not just saying this stuff because it's big in the polls. He should set up a tent in Bainport, outside of Freeport, Illinois, right across from that Bain factory. He should live in that tent until they stop sending that equipment and those jobs out of the country. That's what he could do. Okay, he could do that. He could say, hey, I mean what I'm saying.
But he doesn't.
Where is he? Why? This is a beautiful opportunity if he means what he's saying, if he's not just reading the polls.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for us to actually see if he means it. Another opportunity, by the way, there was a bill to confront China over their currency manipulation. Bipartisan bill. It overwhelmingly passed the Senate, and then it went to the House. And in the House, they have 60 Well, more than 60, it might be as many as 69 now, Republican co-sponsors, Republicans who all go back and campaign in their districts and say, I'm a co-sponsor of the China currency bill. Well, the House leadership is holding it up at the insistence of Wall Street, okay? Wall Street's making so much money off of this, okay? They're holding that bill up. Speaker Boehner won't bring it to the floor for a vote, but there's something that members of Congress can do about that. All the Democrats have signed a discharge petition, it's called. When they get more than 50% of the members of Congress to sign a discharge petition, then it has to come to the floor for a vote. And those 60-plus Republican members of Congress who say they favor this bill, all they have to do is sign that petition, so they're not just going back to their district and saying it, okay?
Yeah.
Mitt Romney could say to Speaker Boehner, Speaker Boehner, I've been talking about currency on the campaign trail, and I think you should bring this bill up for a vote. And he could say to those 60 Republican members of Congress, you should sign this discharge petition. And then that would show that he's not just saying something, that he'll change his position on the minute after he gets those votes for saying it.
I mean, to me, it seems like perfect logic. I mean, at some point, you've got to stop allowing this nation to be steamrolled by the Chinese who are cheating, who are manipulating their currency, who are targeting industry after industry. And I got to be honest, I don't blame them. I don't blame the Chinese. If we're going to let them do it, why not?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of people to feed, too. But it doesn't have to be done this way. Trade doesn't have to be about stealing things like this, and trade is not supposed to make whole regions of our country poorer. It's supposed to be done in a way that makes whole regions of their country richer. And let me explain an example of that. We've had over how many years they've built up, $2 trillion of American currency that came out of selling to us but not buying from us.
Right.
Now, we're supposed to have a trade deal, so it should have been buying and selling. Now, just imagine where you live, anywhere where you can hear this, if China placed, let's just say some of that, let's just say $500 billion of orders for American-made goods right now, What do you think would happen in your region of the country, in my region of the country, across the country? $500 billion of manufacturing facilities having to be set up and hiring people in a hurry to supply that $500. That's just a fraction of what they owe us, okay?
Yep.
Think about the economy, how it would be humming, how things would just be going great. But then think about this. If our economy was taking off from that $500 billion of orders, and I'll tell you, we'd be on good terms with China if they placed those orders. We would be buying more from China. The trade would explode. It would just go up and up. It would be great for China. So actual trade can be a great thing, but that's not what's going on. They have this deal. They want to take these industries over so that their country can dominate as a country. So they're doing a country strategy to seize these things from us, not to trade with us, to seize these things. We're not stopping them, and it's hurting whole regions of our country. It's hurting whole regions of their country because the people there could be getting doing so much more if we were doing this back-and-forth deal. If their currency was where it should be, they could afford to buy more things and live better. They're not. They're coming after us as a country. This is a national security issue, not a trade issue.
Now, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, you look at this when you could no longer manufacture your war machine, what kind of a war machine do you have?
Yeah, well, that's pretty clearly part of this whole concern right now. And, in fact, it just came up, Huawei, I think is how you pronounce it, and another one called ZTE. They have these telecom companies, and the people in the intelligence services and the Intelligence Committee of the House and others are saying, hey, they're using this equipment to spy on us. They are using this equipment to get inside of our companies and go through our computers. And so they're saying, you've got to stop doing business with these companies because they're operating as agents of the Chinese espionage services. You might have seen that on 60 Minutes.
I saw it. Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, this is the reason that I do believe in nations and I do believe in borders. And you trade with things that may that benefit each. I don't believe in this open border stuff. It's not possible. It's not going to work. It hasn't worked. And what ends up happening is you have one winner and everybody else, they're the losers. And, you know, it looks like we're going to be the losers in this if it continues. And I go back to this Sensata thing. You know, they're shipping those, Bain is shipping those jobs out of this country. Their investment over the last couple of years has quadrupled. So it's not like Bain needs the money. It's not like Bain is losing money. They're doing wildly well. This is about getting more money. And that's all it's about. It's about the quick fix. It's about the quick buck. And screw those workers and screw the community.
And they're getting rich off of shipping key strategic components of our national manufacturing ecosystem out of the country. It's a deal with China. They're getting rich. You can just see what's happening to the country as this happens.
Yep.
So we've got to start understanding what's going on here. China is acting like a country, and we're not. And I hate to say, you know, because it could be such a great relationship. It could be this great trade relationship with the Chinese growing a huge middle class out of this. The currency could have them buying stuff. That would help our economy. Our economy growing like that would help their economy. It could be a whole different thing. But no, it's back to the old fashioned, you know, they've got this whole strategy and they're going to try to get us. And that looks like what they're doing, I think.
And, the sad thing is they're letting us. Dave Johnson, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Dave Johnson, Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. Lots of great stuff over there. Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Gonna work on Maggie's farm no more.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Our message is
listen to your associates. Stop retaliating. We're not trying to shut down this company. We're trying to make it better for ourselves and for our customers.
Evelyn Cruz, one of the Walmart workers who rallied at the company headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas on Wednesday. Walmart workers in six cities, including Los Angeles and Dallas, have walked off their jobs recently in the first ever wave of strikes against Walmart operations. The win by striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois is inspiring other Walmart worker activists like Cruz to redouble their efforts. From the Bentonville, Arkansas rally, Cruz said for most Walmart workers, earning a living is next to impossible due to the part-time status and low wages.
We are human beings trying to take care of our families, trying to make a living for ourselves, an honest living, and this company is just not even giving us a chance to earn a living there. It's extremely hard. If you don't have a supportive family, you are not making a living there, let alone trying to support a family.
One U.S. renewable energy industry is getting pinched after losing a tax credit, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. wind turbine industry is starting to feel the impact of Congress not renewing a tax credit that benefits that industry. 75 workers were let go on Tuesday at a blade factory in Colorado. In late September, American Wind Energy Association CEO Denise Bode pled with Congress to renew the credit due to the detrimental impact it would have on well-paying skilled jobs in that industry. Since the credit expired, Siemens has cut nearly 700 jobs, Katana Summit has announced plans to close plants in Nebraska and Washington, and Molded Fiberglass shaved 92 jobs in South Dakota. The tax credit has been credited with helping to provide companies in the wind industry with the ability to create more than 20,000 jobs. Without the credit being renewed, it's projected that just as many jobs as were created will likely be lost. The tax credit expired due to opposition by the Republican Party in the House of Representatives.
American Crystal Sugar has locked out its 1,300 union workers for 14 months now while it makes record profits and its CEO's salary skyrockets. The AFL-CIO has called for a nationwide boycott of American Crystal Sugar to begin October 15th. Here are some of the kids of the locked out workers speaking about the injustice of the lockout.
It's hard because my dad has worked so hard, and so has my mom. And just to see somebody be this uncaring of all the families, it's really heartbreaking.
It's been really hard for our family. I wrote in my letter that I hope we get to pay the bills, make sure we keep our house.
I'm only 11 years old, and I worry about those things because, well, you just think about it, and thinking about it gets you scared, and you want to help, but you can't do nothing.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And you know, the sandwich guy said, you touch this, touch this, touch this, go pay the cashier, there's your sandwich. It's amazing.
Ho, 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 it's magic.
Magic, it's just there. It just appears. It boom, it's there. It's amazing. You know, no people, no work that went into it, none of that. It's just there. And it's kind of like, I guess, what he thinks our healthcare system is. That there's no planning that goes in, there's no government that helped create it, invest in it, build it. No, none of that. It's just there. What is always been. And I love our quote of the day from Mittens. He says, actually, we had healthcare in America before Obamacare came along. And we still have healthcare in America, he says. Each of us today in America has a choice of the type of healthcare plan we might choose. People who are poor are able to get Medicaid. Wow, imagine that. Oh, if only that were true. And if you look at the plan that he and his little minion Ian Ryan want to put out, 72 million people under his plan will be uninsured. But they can get Medicaid, right? Wrong. They're going to cut into that. And I love the quote he had where he was quoted in the Columbus Dispatch. And again, pushing this frame that, you know, poor people, they just go to the doctor. Just go to the hospital, go to the doctor, and it's all taken care of. He said, look, we don't have a setting across this country where if you don't have insurance, we just say to you, tough luck, you're going to die when you have your heart attack. He says, no, no. He says, you know, you're going to get care. You're going to go to the hospital. You're going to get treated. You're going to get care, and it's paid for either by charity or the government or by the hospital. He says we don't have people that become ill who die in their apartments because they don't have insurance. Really? Well, if you look at the numbers, 45,000 people die every year because they lack health insurance. That's one every 12 minutes. And when I saw this again, I thought of Georgianne Kohler, a woman we've had on this program a couple of times, talking about her brother Bill. And I wanted to bring her back and talk about it again because I think it's such a powerful story. And it really highlights what Romney doesn't know. And for him to run around and say, well, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen to anybody is just flat wrong. Georgianne, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, I heard this, I read this statement, I've heard him say it in the past, and I got to be honest, you know, when you hear that, what does it do to you? I mean, it makes me angry. I'm curious what your reaction is.
Angry is probably the least of it. It's just unbelievable. But I guess if you have an elevator in your house for your cars, you really can't connect to people like my brother, my family, and millions of families in America.
A subterranean.
So you don't know what we're going through.
A subterranean parking garage. Not just a parking elevator, but one that goes, a subterranean parking garage elevator. But I look at this and I go, you know, you had Mitt Romney, you know, secretly videotaped talking about the 47%. Well, he doesn't care about those people. He doesn't care about them. They're never going to vote for him, and he doesn't care about them. People like you.
Well, yes, people like me. Last year I became a 47%er after working for 47 years and volunteering before that for 6 at the Little Sisters of the Poor. And he doesn't care about me, and he has not one clue what people like me go through and how we struggle, but we survive.
So let me walk back on this because I want to talk about your brother because I think it's an extremely important story. It's one that should never happen in this country. No one should die because they don't have access to quality health care. No one. I don't care what your situation. No one in this country should be in that situation. Can you tell our listeners about what happened to your brother?
Well, when my brother was 39, he had his first cardiac arrest. They figured out what was wrong, and it was a sudden death type of arrhythmia. So he had to get a internal cardiac defibrillator because there's no cure for this arrhythmia, but that defibrillator will shock his heart back if he goes into it.
Right.
He had insurance taking care of his heart, and his defibrillator wasn't a big deal. In 2003, he lost his job, and with it, his health insurance. He took a job as a pizza delivery driver, and in December of 2007, he was at work. He collapsed to the floor. He was rushed to the hospital. The ER did admit him to a 23-hour monitored bed. The next day, the doctor came in, read his defibrillator, and said, Mr. Kohler, you're lucky that your defibrillator fired this time. The battery is so low. But it will be done as an outpatient. And Bill said, I don't have any insurance. And he said, that's why it's going to be done as an outpatient. He said, you either have to find private health insurance, which he couldn't find because we called everybody many, many times.
Pre-existing condition.
Nobody would insure him.
Right.
He had a pre-existing condition. Or you will have to get on Medicaid, but in the state of Pennsylvania, you can't make more than $6,000 a year to get Medicaid if you're single, or you will have to bring tens of thousands of dollars to the office to be seen, or if you don't have the money, you won't be seen.
So when Romney says that, you know, we're not going to let people die in their apartments, they're going to go to the hospital, they're going to get treated, they're going to get care, it's paid for, charity, government, hospital, that's not your experience.
Oh, no. And on March 7th of 2009, I think it was 1 year, 2 months, and some odd days later, he died in his car coming home from work, 11 days before his 58th birthday. So, no, Romney is absolutely, if that's his dream, then I hope he never wakes up to our nightmare. Because now when I want to see my brother, I have to close my eyes. And so I fought to get health care reform. You know, they call it Obamacare. But I'll tell you, Rick, the handprints on that bill don't belong to Obama. It belongs to the uninsured and the families of the uninsured that died that carried that bill to his desk, and we made sure he had enough pens to sign it. His role was telling us change begins with us, and we decided it needed change.
And thank you for all the work that you've done. You know, there's still much more to be done and much more that we need to do to make this bill much better, this law much better. But I look at what Mitt Romney's saying. You know, they're going to repeal it. They're going to take it away. Going to strip this away from the 32 million people that are going to get health care, from the kids who are able to stay on their parents' policies. Going to go back to the days of rescission, go back to the days of pre-existing condition. And as the last number I saw, Romney's health care plan, the proposal that he's come out with, would leave some 72 million Americans without basic health insurance.
Yes, and I'm sure they're not all 47 percenters. So, you know, he's going to hurt a lot of people, and he doesn't care. It's like he already is focused on a group of people that, even if they didn't have insurance, they had enough money in the bank to cover whatever hospital bill they had.
Could your brother be alive today if he had health insurance?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I don't know when God's going to take somebody, but when he went into his V-fib in his car, that defibrillator would have brought him back. And, you know, I just talked to a doctor who called me about getting out the vote, and I said, well, I'm interested in health care reform. I don't want it repealed. And he said, how come? And I told him about my brother, and he said, a defibrillator replacement. He said, it's simple. It takes like an hour and a half. And I said, but he didn't have insurance. He said, well, he said, this is really a sin.
Yeah, and, you know, I look at you, you said your brother was a pizza delivery driver, and I, you know, I remember Mitt Romney had a fundraising event at Papa John's palatial estate. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of Papa John's estate built off of the labor of people like your brother, who said that he wouldn't increase the price of his pizza 10 cents to ensure that every one of his workers, every one of the people whose blood, sweat, and tears, their hard work created what he has, he wouldn't raise it 10 cents to make sure that they had health security. People like your brother would have that security that would have kept him alive to this day.
And you know what's so sad, Rick, is my brother would tell us, well, he didn't tell us, but after he died, the people that came to the funeral, the one guy said Bill would go to a house of a working man, and that guy would be standing at the door with his head down and his kids crying on the couch, and say to Bill, you have to take the pizza back. I'm short a buck and a half, and I can't find it anywhere. And Bill would say, listen, I've been there. I know what you're going through. I'm going to cover you. I'm not taking your pizza back. Tell your kids to stop crying. And when you have the money, bring it down to the shop. And they said he would come to work, and there'd be three and four envelopes with a buck and a half and an extra quarter for a tip.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of man that was. He understood what working poor people were going through, what middle-class people are going through. Romney doesn't have a clue.
Yeah, I mean, I
do believe Barack Obama knows what we're going through.
I hope so. But, you know, I got to tell you, that's the kind of world I want to live in. Those are the kind of people I want to live with, not the kind that would rip your heart out for a penny, not the people who would slit your throat for a penny, but someone like your brother. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, he always said, he said to my sister, you know, nobody wants a handout. But once in a while, they need a helping hand, and if I have enough change in my pocket, I'm going to help them out.
And I look at this election, and for me, I mean, this really is one of those moments in history where we're going to decide who we are as a nation. Are we going to be that nation that says, you know, I don't really care about anybody else, it's all about me, hooray for me, and screw you? Or are we that nation that, you know, my mother told me we were? The ones who looked out for our neighbors, the ones who thought, you know, as for the grace of God, there go I. Which way will we go, I wonder?
I know when my father was in the hospital years ago in the 50s, you know, we didn't have much because they didn't pay sick time then, you know. And every Saturday we would open up our front door and there'd be bags of groceries and an envelope with some money in it from my mother. No name. It was just from neighbors. And in my little community, we still try to do that. But I have a friend that lives in an area, and she doesn't even know her neighbor's name.
Yeah.
It's really pretty sad. And we've got to get back to being our brothers and sisters' keeper.
And it's coming back together, and it's stopping with this message that we're all individuals, and hooray for me, and the heck with everybody else. And I look at this ticket, the Romney Ryan ticket, who, you know, if you look at the Ryan plan to privatize Medicare and really to destroy Social Security, I can't imagine someone like you who, you know, admittedly you're not one of the 47% because you did work your entire life, and now you are on Social Security collecting Medicare, and you don't make enough to pay federal income tax. You pay a whole lot of other taxes. I know that, but you're not paying that federal income tax. You know, I can't imagine from your point of view, after a lifetime of work, being lumped into a category where they're trying to say these are lazy and shiftless people.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting if you ask me. But the thing that makes me the angriest is when Ryan tells people, you know what, as long as you're on Medicare now, we're not going to touch it. It's going to be 55 and younger. What makes him think seniors are so selfish to think, well, he's talking about my kids and my grandkids?
Well, it's because he is that selfish.
Yes. So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to get it because I'm out on the sidewalks every day talking about that to my neighbors who are seniors.
And what are they saying?
They're saying, you mean it could be my kids that are going to lose their Social Security and their Medicare? And I said, yes. And she says, well, I'm not voting for him then. I don't care if he takes mine, but he's not taking my kids.
No, I think it's a major miscalculation on the side of the Romney Ryan ticket to go after that and make that divide. But again, it's what they do. It's that divide and conquer mentality. It's pitting young and old. You know, it's pitting, you know, the seniors against workers, especially when you're talking about college kids and seniors. They're doing a masterful job of doing that because the message that they've got, you know, in most of the people I know who are under 20 thinking, well, you know, I'll see a UFO before I see a Social Security check, which is nonsense,
yep.
But it's what they believe.
And I mean, it's not, Medicare ain't cheap. I had just fallen down a couple of steps and hurt my knee. The ER cost me $66. I'm paying $100 for my Medicare and then $77 to get my, or $69 it's going up, to get my UPMC for life. It cost me $66 copay at the ER. I had to go see a specialist. That was $40. Had to go to see my doctor. That was $10. So it's not cheap. It's not like we're asking for a handout, but we're paying what we can afford.
Well, and you paid for it through your working lives. I mean, this was the compromise. This was the deal. You pay for it, and when you retire, it's going to be there. So you have some security in old age, be it, you know, through Social Security, having a little bit of income to make sure that you're not living in poverty, and also having that health security, which I think we should all have, not just in our old age, but from cradle to grave.
Yeah, you know, if they want to claim pro-life, they better start being in from cradle to grave.
Absolutely.
Not just the first 9 months.
So
but I have a funny story. I had to go to Staples the other day to get a picture blown up.
Uh-huh.
And there was a young man that worked there who was doing the work, and he said, what's this for? And I said, oh, we're doing a healthcare rally. And he said, oh, I hope they don't repeal it. And I said, how come? He said, because I'm on my parents' insurance. And I said, well, don't you have insurance here? You know, job creator Romney with Staples. He said, oh, no, this is minimum wage, no benefit.
Yep. Well, I mean, those are the good jobs of the Romney view. You
mm-hmm.
know, the Sports Authority, the Domino's Pizza, and the Staples. You know, those family-sustaining jobs that you can stake a career on. Now, look, I'm not bad-mouthing the jobs. You need them. But
you
these
need
are
them,
not...
But if you're going to give us middle-class jobs, start now.
Yep. Or make those
kid,
jobs
middle-class. I guess this kid has asthma, and he said, without my parents' insurance, he said, I wouldn't be able to afford my inhaler.
That just criminal. Absolutely criminal. And like I've said, you know, no one in this country should go without care when
yep.
they're sick. I mean, no one should go without food when they're hungry or health care when they need it.
Yep.
Even though we've got the Romneys of the world saying, well, you could just, and Bush did it too, you could just go to the hospital, and it's paid for. Not that they're not going to hound you to the day you die to pay that bill, ruin your credit, and destroy your ability to get a loan in the future. But we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, and I feel bad that Ann Romney, you know, talks about having the breast cancer and the MS, and I'm glad that she has insurance and
yep.
she can get these things done. But I met people who lost their parents because they had cancer and they couldn't get their chemos. And we collected holiday wish cards last year or a couple years ago for healthcare reform. And a young man wrote, "Dear President Obama, I have MS. I'm uninsured. Merry Christmas." So, you know, I feel fortunate for her, and I feel very, very sad for the people that are out there without the care because they didn't have health care at the time. Today they have it, and now some moron wants to take it away.
Excellent point, and we're going to end on that. Georgianne Kohler, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and keep up the fight.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Power, come and open up your eyes. Power, we stand and fight together. Power when we organize. Power, we stand and fight together. There's power when we organize. Power, when we stand and fight together. There's power when we organize.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
As they drill for quick corporate profits deep inside our earth, such natural gas frackers as ExxonMobil and Halliburton are not only causing enormous harm to people's health, the environment, and local economies all across the country, but they're also fracking something essential to a properly functioning democratic society, truth. They are hailing themselves both as exemplars of free market success and as the virtuous ones in our society, the producers and makers, as contrasted to the mass of Americans that the far-right corporatists are now openly calling moochers and takers. The current natural gas boom, the frackers exclaim in a self-serving narrative fabricated by their PR departments and political front groups, is a victory over those wimpy and undeserving producers of wind and solar power who are dependent on government subsidies to get up and running. The shale gas boom, wrote the oil and gas-funded American Enterprise Institute this year, has occurred, quote, away from the greedy grasp of Washington. AEI's laissez-faire fabulous snidely added that surely Washington would have done something to slow it down, tax it more, or stop it altogether had the bureaucrats realized that private enterprise was making such progress. Indeed, crowed an industry PR group, the free market has worked its magic. Sheesh, their BS goes deeper than their fracking gas wells. First, magicians don't perform magic, they do illusions. Second, for three decades, the federal government has pumped more than $100 million into research for the frackers, finding ways to make the technique work. And since 1980, the big bad government they now badmouth has paid frackers more than $10 billion in a subsidy written specifically for them. This is Jim Hightower saying, these oil giants aren't the virtuous ones, they're liars, fracking their own integrity.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Don't really care about the economy. Don't care much about democracy. I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Jamie Dimon, the chief executive officer there at J.P. Morgan Chase, yesterday had an interesting statement. Said, I don't mind paying 39.6% in taxes. I want a society which is always getting more equitable. I find it interesting that the big bank titan is saying that he would be willing to pay higher taxes, doesn't mind paying higher taxes to help solve the economic crisis and have a more equitable society. Find that fairly interesting. You know, maybe, but you notice how he put that 39.6, which is the Clinton number. Instead of talking about the Reagan number, instead of talking about how we get to the higher numbers, you know, he's going to stick to that. Well, I'll pay higher, but not that much higher. But, you know, look. I listened to George Ann Kohler's story. I listened to the fact that, you know, her brother should be alive today. But for tax cuts for folks like Diamond, tax cuts for people like Romney, tax cuts for the wealthy in this country, we can't get health care to folks who need it, especially low-wage workers. You've got to be destitute and in dire straits in order to get help, and that's by design. Now, that's what the Republicans have, and some conservative Democrats have done. That's the situation that they've put us into. And I say, you know, health care should be an absolute right. If you're a citizen of this country, you should have health care from the time you're born until the day you die. And you know what that would do? That would make the health care industry help keep you well. A lot more prevention, a lot more intervention, a lot more, hey, you know, go to the doctor. You know, smart stuff, things we used to know. I guess not so much. I listened to this statement by Jeb Haslinger, the Republican from Texas. And again, you know, I've been saying that what we're going to see is we're going to see the tax reform bill of 86 all over again. And he's right there. He said, you know, talking about the Republican tax plan, the Romney tax plan, he says, you know, we did this in 03. It was done in the Reagan administration. It was done under Kennedy, under JFK. And guess what? When you follow this recipe, you get more jobs, more economic growth, and more tax revenue, which, again, is exactly the tax reform bill of 86. And it's the line that they use. Well, we're going to get more jobs, more economic growth, more tax revenue. I've heard that so many times. And what did we actually get? What we actually got was more inequality. More folks like her brother who's out there working his behind off can't afford health care. And I go back and I remember Joe, the guy that I met during our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. Guy worked every day of his life. And for what? When he got sick, he got kicked out of his job, he lost his health care, and then what? Well, he went to the doctor and he got the care that Romney's talking about. And his credit was ruined. They harassed him almost every day of his life to pay the bills that he couldn't afford because he was homeless. There's no forgiveness. And this is what drives me nuts about Romney's comment. And you hear the right talk about this a lot. Well, if you're sick, you can just go to the doctor. Yeah, let me know how that works out for you. And let me know how it works out if you have a long-term illness, if you have a chronic ailment, one that's going to take follow-up care and numerous doctor visits. Explain to me how that's going to work, because it's not. And you're not going to get the drugs you need, and you're not going to get the care you need, and you are going to die. And that's okay with them. Because according to Romney, you've got choice. Plenty of choice. And you can just go to the doctor and it's paid. We don't need a national health care plan. No, the invisible health care plan will take care of you. I mean, I don't know how you can listen to that story. You can listen to the story that George Ann Kohler told and not think something is seriously wrong with what we're doing in this country. Not think, you know what? Things are screwed up. We're the wealthiest country in the nation, and somebody who's busting his behind working every day delivering pizzas is going to die because he can't afford to get the battery replaced? Really? Is that us? And that's what I'm telling you. We're at a crossroads right now. What kind of a nation are we going to be? Are we going to be that exceptional nation that I believe we are, or are we going to continue down the hooray for me and screw everybody else path? I'm sure hoping we're all in this together. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Don't know much biology. Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
There is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job Killing Organization of America.
Because, brothers, it's a fact. If we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some up above.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I got to tell you, I miss her. I miss Crazy. I love that woman. Insanity for me. That's a real turn on. And I miss the whole Republican primary. I mean, that was just comic gold right there. I'd love to have those days back. But here we are, the big debate this evening. I wonder how much energy talk, how much Solyndra talk. But you look at the recent polling that's been done. Heart Research just did a national survey. 92% of the people who took the survey said, you know what? We want solar. We want to invest and we want new technology. And you know, it was poll after poll. People want to get off of oil. They want to get off of getting our energy from people who hate us. But our friends on the right, the big money folks, the big oil folks, well, status quo. And I've said a number of times, I think this is 1980 all over again. And I've got Stephen Lacey on the line. He's a reporter, blogger over at Climate Progress, where he's written a couple of really good pieces on solar and the Solyndra thing. Stephen, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Pleasure to be on, as always.
You know, I look at this, and the right is, you know, they're out there beating the drum. Solyndra, you know, is wasted money. I'm sorry. I don't know that investing in future technologies is a bad idea, considering the fact that three companies out of the 26 that we invested in have had problems. I think that's a pretty good record.
Absolutely. When you look at the investments that have been laid out since the stimulus package was passed across smart grid technologies, clean energy deployment, energy efficiency deployment, public transportation, you look across the clean energy companies, and it's only 1% of companies that have been funded through these federal programs that have gone belly up. When you look at the loan guarantee program specifically that supported Solyndra, it's about 3% of the total cost of the program, and that is well under what Congress expected it to cost. So what you're seeing is exactly that, drum beating on the right in order to make this a political issue instead of saying, yes, we need to make smart investments in clean energy. They are using this to attack the president specifically in an election year, and that has been very clear over the last year.
And really to attack any alternative to get us off of the juice. And I would argue that, you know, this is at the behest of the big oil companies who want to keep us addicted.
I think that's absolutely correct. When you look at the money that flows into politics, the millions of dollars that have flowed to particularly Republicans in the House of Representatives that have voted hundreds of times over the last couple of years to repeal clean water and clean air provisions, to block the EPA from regulating greenhouse gas emissions, to cut funding for renewable energy technologies, it is very clear that money has a major influence. With that said, I think this is being elevated because it's an election year. And because Obama has put so much stock in clean energy, they're using a couple of bankruptcies to slam the very idea that we should be investing in these technologies. So I think it's twofold. And then unfortunately, you see moderate Republicans who have previously been supportive of clean energy, many of whom requested funds through the stimulus package, now being forced into this situation where they're saying that they think that these investments are a mistake. And so this has been a cascading problem as we get closer and closer to the election. I think money is the root of the problem, but unfortunately the silly political season is influencing it as well.
Yeah. You know, I look at all the hearings that have gone on, the subpoenas and all the, you know, something like 300,000 documents they've gone through, all of this time, this energy, all of this resource wasted that could have been spent on doing what the Republicans claimed they were going to do in November of 2010, which is create jobs. I look at all of this and I go, you know, any proof of wrongdoing? Have they found anything? Is there any political favoritism that they've, because I would assume if they found anything, we would have heard by now.
Absolutely. What we found, and what we said at the very beginning of this investigation, is that we support a congressional look into whether or not this program was run as efficiently as possible, whether or not they were making the most prudent loans, whether or not the details of the loans were as good as they should have been. We support congressional oversight in making sure that our tax dollars are being spent as efficiently as possible. However, this quickly turned into a political investigation that one Republican admitted would stop on election day. And again, you said it, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, 12 hearings and private meetings in which they brought the top-level DOE officials in, and they have found no evidence of political wrongdoing, no evidence that the White House manipulated this loan for political gain. There were certain details of the loan that could have been better, and again, we support making these programs better, but it has been a concerted attack on the White House, and it has turned into a political circus. It's just absolutely ridiculous when you look at the track record of this investigation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a witch hunt. It is what it is. But all beyond that, as I've been saying, it's more than just going after the president. It's about the whole thing of moving towards alternatives and investing in the future. It's about, you know, just tip of the nose politic, if you will. We're here and now and not thinking about the future. And that's my problem with a lot of Republican conservative thought, is it's here and now. It's not looking down the road. It's not investing in the future and not leaving our kids with a better tomorrow than we have today.
Absolutely. And conservatives in the past have been traditionally in favor of conservation, of being stewards of the environment. And today you see a completely different brand of conservatism. I mean, Richard Nixon, as many of your listeners know, founded the EPA.
The job-killing organization of America?
Yes, and helped usher in many of the groundbreaking environmental laws that we enjoy today that keep our air and water clean. However, today, because of this influx of money that is really keeping politicians devoted to fossil energies and devoted to rolling back important regulations that provide clean air and clean water, you see a different brand of conservatism devoted to fossil fuels and devoted to tearing down climate science rather than a true traditional conservatism in how we approach the environment.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up Nixon. You know, I just saw something the other day. I think his name is Stephen Pierce, the Republican from New Mexico, was giving a speech at the Colorado Conservative Political Action Conference recently. And going after Teddy Roosevelt. And you go, wait a second. Isn't he one of you? Wasn't he a Republican? Because evidently, Roosevelt had this idea of having, you know, big forests and big national parks that we should conserve and make sure that it's there for future generations. And Pierce and a number of other Republicans, who are trying to push Romney into the direction of privatizing those parks. And of course, let's drill on them. Let's go get that gas from underneath the, Mount Rushmore.
This is one of the most important issues in the election for folks who are concerned about the environment and one of the least looked at issues. You're absolutely right. You see a movement within modern conservatives. They want to see public lands that are put aside for people, that are kept pristine, for people of all classes to visit. They want to put those aside into state control to open them up almost exclusively for oil and gas extraction and mining for minerals and coal. And that's because states, and multiple investigations have been done through this, and reputable journalists and organizations that have looked at this have said that when you give states ultimate control over some of these protected lands, they will almost always use it for oil and gas extraction so that they can bring in more tax dollars.
Yep.
And so what this is they say, we want more state control, we want more state control. That sounds nice. But what you see is that it's really rolling back our tradition of putting aside these lands, protecting them, and keeping these pristine places for people of all socioeconomic classes to visit.
Yeah,
and it really changes the game on how we view public lands.
And the reality is, and we've seen this movie before, it's going to take the land from our hands, you, me, and all the rest of the people, and hand it over to corporations and put it into corporate control, into their hands. We're the ones who end up getting screwed on multiple fronts on this. But it is where they go with all this. And I look at these attacks on Solyndra, because I want to go back to that, because I think it's important to point out that all of these attacks, you could have an honest debate whether they should be funding anything, but these attacks that I'm looking at, the big moneyed interest, the big coal and the big gas, and all of these folks are pushing these attacks so that we turn away from solar and wind and all of the other things. And how much money have they spent on attack ads over the last several months?
We've seen this campaign season over $150 million from either fossil fuel interests or organizations affiliated with fossil fuel interests spending money on energy issues. On Solyndra specifically, we've seen almost $11 million since April, $10.78 million since April, specifically on Solyndra. This is big money. People are these companies and organizations representing these companies are fighting for keeps. And this is an unprecedented amount of money that's flowing into the political system. Generally, what we see is that it has completely influenced the Republican Party, and they have almost exclusively pushed coal, oil, and natural gas and fought against renewables. On the Solyndra side, what we see, and you mentioned this earlier in the interview, that is the American people still want to see renewable energy development. They still support solar, and these attack ads on Solyndra have not quite worked. Poll after poll shows that Americans still support renewable energy. Unfortunately, in the political sphere, the folks who are beholden to these interests, who are paying a lot of money to keep them in office, are not as supportive.
Yeah, I mean, because it's common sense. I think the average person, I think, you know, people in my neighborhood, they get it. I put solar panels on my house because I want to lower my energy costs. I want to be able to produce my own energy and not have to pay a big corporation to have the ability to put lights on in my house. But here in the state of Pennsylvania, what the Republicans have done here is they've allowed the solar industry to die because the solar renewable energy credits that you used to get, they've just walked away from. And when I bought my panels, they were like $225 a credit. Now they're down to like $10 because the Republicans in this state have completely walked away from it, completely in the pocket of natural gas in this state.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that that has been the case in a variety of states, particularly Arizona, where you see the Tea Party has taken over, led by Governor Jan Brewer. You've seen a systematic dismantling of solar targets. Instead of putting in solar, they're now putting in trash incineration so that companies burning trash can apply for renewable energy credits. And you see this in various states. However, there is, you know, some slightly good news. Chris Christie, the darling of the Koch brothers and a major Romney supporter, you know, a pretty hardcore conservative, did recently increase solar targets in New Jersey in order to save the renewable energy credit market there. So I think that while we do see in the Republican Party a wide swath of politicians fighting this industry, you do see some who do understand the local value that renewable energy brings and are trying to do good things. So it's a mixed bag, but I think that there are a lot of scary situations in different states around the country.
Well, let's say come January, Mitt Romney's the guy that takes the keys to the Oval Office. Where does it, based on what he's been saying all along during this campaign, where do you see renewable energies in his platform? Because, you know, I know he's not in favor of extending the wind energy credit. Where is he on solar and the other stuff?
This goes well beyond the wind credit. You look at Mitt Romney's plan, and it is exclusively devoted to more oil drilling on public lands, more offshore oil drilling and drilling in the Arctic, and more coal mining. And he gives a very brief mention to renewable energy, and what he wants to do is put a little bit of money toward research and development. Of course, we all love research and development, but he has nothing in deployment. He has made it very clear that he wants to mine and drill throughout his presidency. And you know what? That's a plan that will run into the laws of physics. We cannot put the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that we are putting in there and continue to live in a livable climate. We have to make some very serious choices about the energy system that we are supporting today. And so this goes back to what we want. You know, unfortunately, many Republicans believe that the climate is not changing and are, you know, anti-science global warming deniers. And when you are in that camp, to you, clean energy is just another special interest. But unfortunately, for many of us who see the dire nature of the environmental problem before us, we understand that we need to make a smart, efficient, but rapid transition to clean energies, and we need an all-hands-on-deck effort to do this. And unfortunately, Romney's plan has absolutely nothing in there that would do this.
Let me ask you this, you know, in the last line of questioning I've got for you, you know, you look at the investments into Solyndra and a lot of the other the renewable energy companies that the Obama administration had put money into, and even at the end of the Bush years, they put some money into it as well. If government doesn't do that, if government's not the one who jumpstarts the investment into these cleaner alternatives, who's going to?
Well, you'll see a little bit of tinkering on the sides. And right now, clean energies have become, you know, with good support, good R&D programs, tax credits that help deploy systems, you've seen a strengthening in the financial system of large banks that are willing to finance these projects. So assuming you took away all government support, you'd see tinkering on the sides. This wouldn't completely and utterly go away. We wouldn't see the systematic transition that we need to see over the coming decade. Today, you know, with those appropriate government signals, and I think that there is, you know, I welcome conservatives who come in and have new ideas about how to deploy these technologies efficiently. But unfortunately, what we see is that the Republican Party is completely against deploying them. Their platform is against clean energy today. So what we need to do is provide a platform where we provide a good market signal to these global investors who will help deploy these projects on a grand level. So if you take it away, you see some tinkering on the edges, and you do not see the very rapid systematic change that we need to see. And quite frankly, you know what? The Obama administration has put together a series of loan guarantees, tax credits, grant programs, challenges, R&D programs, and we've seen renewable electricity double under his presidency. We've seen some of the largest biofuels facilities, wind facilities, solar facilities in the world financed and developed, and we're seeing a transition toward more efficient vehicles. And what we've seen is that this transition has already evolved very rapidly in the last 4 years, and we need to continue to do that.
Yeah, but just as fast as we've seen that improvement and the rapid change that, as you've discussed, we can see the unraveling of it as well with the wrong policy and the wrong administration.
Absolutely. And that's why you say when we go back to this 1980 moment, we are on the verge of that moment. I mean, are we going to metaphorically tear the solar panels off the White House, or are we going to build a bigger and better system and prove to the world that we're serious about this and we can solve our challenges?
Yep, outstanding. Stephen Lacy, I appreciate the time. Reporter, blogger for Climate Progress. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Let's take a quick break. I'm right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We're smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
There is an issue on the flip-flops as it relates to trust. I don't know that he'd go on to be President Obama, given his record. I mean, when there is a question about whether you're running for the White House or running for the Waffle House, you've got a real problem with the American people.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
I gotta tell you, that John Huntsman, he one smooth guy. I met him up in New Hampshire for the Republican primaries. One smooth, rich guy. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. And he's right. I mean, Romney's all over every issue. But I think the one thing that he has been very consistent on is the energy policy. He's bought and paid for. He's the big oil, big gas. He's the big driller guy. He's going to be the guy who's going to make sure that, just like 1980, like we talked with Stephen Lacey there a minute ago, just like 1980, we're at that crossroads. Do we follow a new path? Do we chart a new course for the nation to move us towards energy independence? Or do we, for another 30 years, end up the whipping child of OPEC, where every whim of the international market sends our economy spiraling into trouble? I mean, you think about all of the money that we hand over to OPEC. You think about all of the money that we hand over to these countries that don't like us very much. So we can get to work and we can fuel our economy. Think about it. I mean, how much has been stolen from the American taxpayer, the American working person, in fuel costs? I mean, if we could say, you know, energy, well, we're gonna gasoline's a buck a gallon now because we're not using much of it. And we're producing our own, and we're producing our own electricity. But I'm telling you, we're at this moment. You know, when Reagan took office in 1980, and I've told this a number of times, one of the first things he did as president, and it was very symbolic, was to rip the solar panels off the White House. And you know, those solar panels, I found out, are up in the Northeast at a college up in New England, still to this very day, providing hot water for the cafeteria of that college. That could have been saving the White House a little bit of money, but because of that ideology, well, that's been torn away. And as a nation, I mean, think about what we would have done had we continued down the path that Carter had set, the energy policy that he had set to say, you know what, we're never going to use more energy than we did in 1977. No more foreign energy. We're going to create our own, and it's going to be renewable, and it's going to be domestic. I mean, you think about how fragile our economy is, how fragile our nation is, where we need our energy from overseas, where we need most of our production from overseas. I mean, we better start thinking in ways of, really honestly and truthfully, in ways of national security. Instead of this idiotic bickering, look, gas isn't going away. It's not. Natural gas, the drilling, not going to stop. But we should be using less of that. We should be producing more alternative energy domestically. And I think that's something everybody can agree on. You know, I don't know anybody who's saying, you know, solar is going to replace all of our energy needs or wind's going to No. But what it can do is it can get us less dependent. And, you know, if you want to talk about being a very strong nation, I think energy independence is that place where we need to be. You know, the right loves to talk about, well, you know, we need to get the debt under control. No, we need to get our energy needs under control, and we need to get it domestically and solve our trade problems. And you look at the renewable energy sector, the Chinese have cornered that because we've allowed it, because we haven't fought back and we haven't stood up and said, no. Sure, bring those cheap panels in here. Bring that junk in. Yeah, bring it right on in. It's cheap. Isn't that what they told us? We get more of them. Yeah, we get more cheap junk. Now, how much cheap junk do we need? I'd like some quality stuff, wouldn't you? Just a thought. But this energy thing, this is to me a very key issue in this election. You know, I believe Romney will take us back back to 1980. And that's the end of it for us. You won't hear about solar panels or wind energy or geothermal or any of that for at least another generation. If you missed any portion of the program thus far, ricksmithshow.com. Quick break, back with the third hour. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Our message is, listen to your associates. Stop retaliating. We're not trying to shut down this company. We're trying to make it better for ourselves and for our customers.
Evelyn Cruz, one of the Walmart workers who rallied at the company headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas on Wednesday. Walmart workers in six cities, including Los Angeles and Dallas, have walked off their jobs recently in the first ever wave of strikes against Walmart operations. The win by striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois is inspiring other Walmart worker activists like Cruz to redouble their efforts. From the Bentonville, Arkansas rally, Cruz said for most Walmart workers, earning a living is next to impossible due to the part-time status and low wages.
We are human beings trying for ourselves an honest living, and this company is just not even giving us a chance to earn a living there. It's extremely hard. If you don't have a supportive family, you are not making a living there, let alone trying to support a family.
One U.S. renewable energy industry is getting pinched after losing a tax credit, Jesse Russell reports.
The U.S. wind turbine industry is starting to feel the impact of Congress not renewing a tax credit that benefits that industry. 75 workers were let go on Tuesday at a Blade factory in Colorado. In late September, American Wind Energy Association CEO Denise Bode pled with Congress to renew the credit due to the detrimental impact it would have on well-paying skilled jobs in that industry. Since the credit expired, Siemens has cut nearly 700 jobs, Katana Summit has announced plans to close plants in Nebraska and Washington, and Molded Fiberglass shaved 92 jobs in South Dakota. The tax credit has been credited with helping to provide companies in the wind industry with the ability to create more than 20,000 jobs. Without the credit being renewed, it's projected that just as many jobs as were created will likely be lost. The tax credit expired due to opposition by the Republican Party in the House of Representatives.
American Crystal Sugar has locked out its 1,300 union workers for 14 months now while it makes record profits and its CEO's salary skyrockets. The AFL-CIO has called for a nationwide boycott of American Crystal Sugar to begin October 15th. Here are some of the kids of the locked out workers speaking about the injustice of the lockout.
It's hard because my dad has worked so hard, and so has my mom. And just to see somebody be this uncaring of all the families, it's really heartbreaking.
It's been really hard for our family. I wrote in my letter that I hope we get to pay the bills, make sure we keep our house.
I'm only 11 years old, and I worry about those things because, well, you just think about it, and thinking about it gets you scared, and you want to help, but you can't do nothing.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, that's at laborradio.org.
The second topic, which is you said you get a deduction for taking a plant overseas. Look, I've been in business for 25 years. I have no idea what you're talking about.
He's been in business 25 years. One of the guys who pioneered, you know, jobs moving overseas. Yet he doesn't know you get a tax credit for it, or so he wants us to believe. I mean, really, stop and think about that for a second. The guy who has done it over and over, and just one of many people like him. Many of these private equity hedge fund guys who, you know, it's all about the profit. All about harvesting companies for down the road and, you know, going where they can make the fastest, quickest buck. And yet he wants us to believe that there are no tax credits for moving overseas. No, we don't get to deduct all of those costs of shipping, crating up, boxing up all of our equipment and shipping it overseas. No, no. I can't think of another company that would be doing that about right now. I think of this Sensata Technologies company, one that Bain Capital owns portions of. You know, you kind of got to wonder, how'd that happen? Oh, yeah, his leadership, his vision, if you will. And why has he not mentioned it once? I mean, you would think a guy who's out there thumping his chest, saying he's going to be so tough on China, going to be the one to stand up and save American jobs, you'd think he would say something, you know, that the company that he founded, the company he birthed, is shipping jobs overseas. Just a little something? Probably not. And, you know, tonight during the debate, I'm a little disappointed. Biden, first half hour, just tore Ryan apart. It wasn't even close. But the reality is we didn't talk about trade. We didn't talk about saving jobs. We didn't talk about, you know, preventing American tax dollars from shipping jobs overseas. We didn't talk about it, and I think we should. Anyway, right now as we speak, the workers at Sensata Technologies, who are going to be, well, former workers, they're, you know, camping out. They're doing what they can do to save their company. I've got Bonnie Borman. She's one of the Sensata Technology workers, or should I say soon-to-be unemployed former Sensata workers. Who, as we speak, they're creating up that job. They're creating up those machines and all of the things that they made their living with and shipping it to China. And again, you didn't hear much of it during the debate. Just some platitudes. I've got Bonnie Borman on the line. Bonnie, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
You know, what's going on right now? Where are we in the shipping phase?
They're starting to create up machinery now, and it won't be long before they're putting it on the trucks and driving it to the West Coast, I'm assuming, to put on a ship to send to China.
It's absolutely got to break your heart.
Yeah, it does, because I've got 23 years invested, and I'm one of the lower senior people. I mean, there's people who have 30 and 40 years that are losing their jobs, and you know, we're just watching everything just be taken away, and it's heartbreaking to see where we once, you know, were a real busy factory. There's huge empty spots, and it's tough.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, the first question that always comes to mind is the company struggling. I mean, are they, you know, is this a desperation move? What's the status? What's the situation there?
No, we're not desperate. They've made record profits since they bought us a year and a half ago. So it's not that we're going down a tube that they have to sell us. It's because they want more money.
Yeah, I saw something the other day that said that Bain Capital, the people who own it, have actually quadrupled their money over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And that's not enough, evidently.
Right. No one needs that much money. What are they going to do with it?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to buy another company, they're going to over-leverage that, and they're going to ship those jobs overseas so they can make more and replicate this over and over and over again, because this is what the Romneys of the world do. This is how they make their fortune. They're not job creators. They're vipers. They're marauders. They go from one place to another and leave destruction behind them.
Right. And it's certainly not to help out the Chinese people. Their conditions are just awful.
And this is where I say all the time, you know, we need to have solidarity across borders. Working people need to be standing together no matter where the jobs go. We need to make sure that they pay living wages and decent conditions and where workers actually have a voice. And I look at this, and what's frustrating to me is I have yet to hear Mitt Romney, who I believe could stop this. I think, you know, as the guy who birthed Bain Capital, now running for president, thumping his chest about how tough he's going to be on China. I think that this would be a place where, if I were him, I would take the stand. I would say, no, we're not going to lose another auto parts factory. We're not going to lose another auto parts manufacturing job. We've lost 300,000 of them already. This is where I would draw the line. You want to act tough? You want to thump your chest? Right here's where you do it.
You're absolutely right. I think that he is the person who could stop this. But I don't really think that he has any plans to do that.
Well, I would hope he's not. If he's got plans, I'd hope he not wait too much longer, because as you've said, they're actually crating up the machinery. They're putting it onto trucks, going to ship it out of the country. What's he waiting for?
Right.
And again, I go back to this. You know, there's part of me that goes, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about, he's already said he doesn't care about 47% of the working people who don't make enough money to pay federal income tax. Is he telling me now he doesn't care about you or me or anybody else who pays a little bit of federal income tax?
I'm thinking so. I mean, we've got people right now this week that stood in front of trucks trying to stop them from moving equipment.
And they were arrested.
Taking arrests.
Yeah, and arrested for it.
Yeah, for trying to save American jobs.
And your community. I mean, what's this going to mean to the community that you live in? I mean, these 170 jobs, I'm told, are some of the best-paying jobs in your community. What's going to happen to the small shops? What's going to happen to Main Street?
It's going to really affect the Freeport area and the surrounding areas because, you know, this is a not a big town, but it's has a lot of small towns surrounding it, and, you know, it's going to affect a lot of people. There's, like you said, all the small businesses that we, you know, have the extra money, we can go out to eat or, you know, go shopping or whatever. We're not going to have that now, and that's a lot of income to take away from communities this size.
I mean, it's just heartbreaking. I mean, this is just one factory. I mean, I think of the thousands that we've lost over the years. Well, I think the last number I saw was 55,000 factories that employed 500 people or more have been just eviscerated in the last, since 2000. And those jobs have gone to places like China and India and all over the world, but not here. And we have done nothing as a government. We have done nothing from policy to stop that and to make sure that American workers are protected. We, in fact, we keep pushing trade agreements that allow that to happen.
Right. And that's part of what we're doing right now is we're standing up and saying enough is enough. I mean, if I'm not going to say anything about what's happening, then that's like saying it's okay, and for me it's not okay.
And it shouldn't be just you. It should be all of us saying it's not okay that it happens
right.
to you. It's not okay that it happens to me. It's not okay that it happens to any of us. And I understand you guys have set up like a camp, you know, campsite, making sure that there's someone there at all times. Tell me about what's going on there.
Yeah, we're camping out at the Stevenson County Fairgrounds in Freeport, right across the street from the Sensata factory. Basically, we keep an eye on anything that's going on at the factory and, you know, just we're letting them know that we're there and we're not going to just take it.
And I understand you've been following the Romney campaign around, trying to get him to say something, trying to bring some attention to what's going on. Because is it possible he doesn't know what's going on?
Oh, I absolutely think that it's not possible. I think he knows, and his response was to blame President Obama by saying that he also owns stock in Sensata. But there's a difference because President Obama's stock is in the Illinois pension fund, which he has no control over where they put that money.
Right.
Whereas Mitt Romney's owns personal stock in Sensata.
And beyond that, and beyond it, this is the company that he birthed. This is the company that carries his philosophy, his ideology. This is the company that he started and set on this course to not just do this to your company, but how many countless other ones, how many countless other workers have gone through the same thing that you're going through and not been fortunate enough to be able to fight back?
Lots. We're actually having some from France come this Saturday that were Samsonite luggage makers, and Bain Capital bought that and just kind of dissolved it, and they all lost their jobs, and they're coming to stand in solidarity with us this Saturday. So,
you know, I can't imagine what your coworkers are going through. I mean, you know, in looking at this, you know, when someone loses a job, they generally lose their health care. They if they can't find another one, they end up losing their homes. They end up losing their livelihoods and their identities. What is this going to mean to these folks that you've spent years and years with?
That's exactly what it means. That, you know, there's a lot of single parents that this is their only insurance that they have. So they'll have no insurance. They're going to have to rely on state insurance I know that insurance is way too expensive to buy individually, especially if you don't have a job. And, yeah, it's homes. I mean, the housing market already is bad enough in this town. I mean, put a few more houses on the market and it just gets worse.
It's going to depress it even more. You know, let me ask you this. If this happens and if they do move overseas, which it looks like it's probably going to happen, will you and your coworkers be eligible for the trade adjustment assistance program? Since this is a trade related thing, I mean, we are losing this plant that's being, you know, shipped overseas. Will you be eligible for that? Something that, if you remember, Republicans in the House fought vehemently to destroy and fought vehemently to severely limit so people who are affected like you are couldn't get this little bit of help that they have put into place.
Yeah, we are eligible for that. They have a few stipulations as far as, you know, what you can take. It has to be something that you can use in this specific area. So it's kind of limited.
Right.
But, yeah, we are eligible for that.
Because I look at it, and I've had a couple of people go, well, I wouldn't crate it up. I wouldn't work for them. I wouldn't trade my train my Chinese replacements. And I said, well, I understand. If you don't get the severance package at the end, and you definitely don't get the trade adjustment assistance. You're basically out on your ear, and they will find some scab to come in and do it.
Right. They will.
And I guess that says a lot about our society. I without even really thinking of what I said, that really says a lot about us. Because, you know, I look at this and it's just plain wrong, Bonnie. It's absolutely wrong that this happens. And for what? A couple extra bucks for a handful of people.
Right. Right. And the rest of us are just, you know, I'm looking at, you know, a minimum wage job. That's going to really cut down the funds and without benefits. But, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a husband who I can still get insurance through, but there's a lot of people who don't have that option, a lot of them. And, you know, it's just wrong that stuff like this happens.
So what's the timeline on this? When does it look like this stuff's going to – when's all of this going to finally come down? When will this happen?
My scheduled date is November 5th, which is the day right before Election Day.
Oh, is that not telling?
Yeah. And the final, I think, is around December 21st. They actually have the lease until January 31st, but they have to get the building all cleaned out by then.
Man, Merry Christmas. There's the door.
Pretty much.
That is an absolute shame. And you know, I got to be honest. When I hear these stories, it just infuriates me. Is there anything that we can do to help? Any pressure that we can put? What are you guys? What's the campaign? What's the ask?
We're at Daneport.com has a lot of, you know, everything that we're doing right now, and just standing with us in solidarity and getting the word out there to, you know, fight this injustice with sending our jobs, good paying jobs overseas. I mean, just keep spreading the word, and that's how we're going to win this.
Yeah, absolutely. Bonnie, I appreciate the time. It's been good talking to you. I wish you nothing but the best of luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, but I look at this, look, and the reality is the Romney policy of this. Get used to this stuff because it's going to be more. If we see a Romney administration, it's going to be much more. Because his territorial tax system that he's proposing, all experts are saying that is a pipeline for more outsourcing. That is just going to open it wide open, and you're going to see even more jobs leaving because of that territorial tax system that he wants. Sad stuff. And this is just an absolute travesty. Let's take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check them out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
As they drill for quick corporate profits deep inside our earth, such natural gas frackers as ExxonMobil and Halliburton are not only causing enormous harm to people's health, the environment, and local economies all across the country, but they're also fracking something essential to a properly functioning democratic society, truth. They are hailing themselves both as exemplars of free market success and as the virtuous ones in our society. The producers and makers, as contrasted to the mass of Americans that the far-right corporatists are now openly calling moochers and takers. The current natural gas boom, the frackers exclaim in a self-serving narrative fabricated by their PR departments and political front groups, is a victory over those wimpy and undeserving producers of wind and solar power who are dependent on government subsidies to get up and running. The shale gas boom, wrote the oil and gas-funded American Enterprise Institute this year, has occurred, quote, away from the greedy grasp of Washington. AEI's laissez-faire fabulous snidely added that surely Washington would have done something to slow it down, tax it more, or stop it altogether had the bureaucrats realized that private enterprise was making such progress. Indeed, crowed an industry PR group, the free market has worked its magic. Sheesh, their BS goes deeper than their fracking gas wells. First, magicians don't perform magic, they do illusions. Second, for three decades, the federal government has pumped more than $100 million into research for the frackers, finding ways to make the technique work. And since 1980, the big bad government they now badmouth has paid frackers more than $10 billion in a subsidy written specifically for them. This is Jim Hightower saying, these oil giants aren't the virtuous ones, they're liars, fracking their own integrity.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. The debate over, I think hands down, anybody who watched or listened to the debate, you saw a Joe Biden who was comfortable, who was on top of the issues, who was wide-eyed and lucid, and really not taking any guff. And you saw Paul Ryan who was, well, stuck to platitudes, stuck to talking points, and didn't seem prepared. In fact, continually repeated himself. It's one thing to stay on message. It's one thing to stay on point. It's a whole other thing to keep repeating yourself over and over and over again. And every answer, he would make the 30-second little pop, and then he would regurgitate it. And it's like, you know, okay, you practiced your lines. Move on to the next one. And I see some of the Republican responses. Wow, Biden was rude. He was unhinged. If that was unhinged, you know, then the Romney bus, they just lost their doors. The reality is, you know, Ryan got thumped. He was shown for the ideologue that he is, you know, and that he doesn't always agree with his own guy. And I got to be honest, I was happy to see Joe Biden bring up the 47% comment, of which there is no defense. And even Romney had to come back and say, well, I've now completely denounced that, and I now care about them. Yeah, we'll just wait a little while. That'll change, too. And I'm glad that Biden brought up the fact that Ryan, you know, the 30% comment, you know, those people, they're takers. And, you know, my question when I heard it the first time was, you know, which 30% is he talking about? Is he talking about, you know, the 30% of the folks at the top? You know, that 1% that was sitting around the room with Romney there? Because I always loved that frame. You know, there are some people who are producers and there are some people who are parasites. And then you find out the people who are pointing their fingers saying that they're the producers and you're the parasites, they're the ones sucking the most of the programs dry. But at the end of it, the biggest screw up of all, I think, by Ryan, and a lot of things can be forgiven because, to be honest, you know, Joe Biden is good in that forum. He was very comfortable. He was very, you know, very forthright. I think the biggest mistake that Ryan made was bringing up the dependency thing, because nobody I know thinks that they're dependent. Nobody I know thinks that, you know, when they get the earned income tax credit because they didn't make enough money, that they're dependent. Nobody I know who has children who get the child tax credit think they're dependent. Nobody I know takes the mortgage interest off of their mortgage on their think they're dependent. None of them. And even the people who go to work and need to get health care from government and need to get food stamps to try and help, they don't see themselves as dependent. They're trying. They're working their behinds off. What we've got is we've got an economy that is not working. And it's because of the policies that created this massive hole. What we need are full employment policies. We need to get people back to work. And, you know, Ryan and Romney, you know, they're trying to push. Well, what we need to do is more of the same stuff that got us into the mess that we've been digging out of for the last 4 years. And you don't buy it. The same failed ideas, the same failed ideology. More tax cuts, more handouts for the wealthy. Really? Are we going to fly this again? And if you listen to Ryan, yeah, absolutely. That's the way to go. And I love the fact that the moderator brought up math. You know, simple math. Numbers generally don't lie. Because if you look at the Ryan Romney plan, their math just doesn't add up. I don't know how you cut taxes across the board. Don't know how you do it and expect to balance the budget. Unless you do what we already know that Ryan has proposed, which is slashing all programs that help, you know, the bottom half of us. And again, that whole idea of, well, we're gonna balance the budget on the backs of those least able to afford it. And I was happy to see Biden bring up the Medicare and Social Security and talk about it in very real, very factual ways. You know, the more they throw this out, this division, because understand what they're trying to do with Medicare. They're really trying to divide the country in two. People who are on Medicare, you know, the old one, and then the voucherized one. And then you're going to pit them against each other. And we cannot allow that to happen. You cannot allow us to be divided over that. But I look at the debate, you know, I think the first 30 minutes, I think, honestly, Biden just cleaned his clock. And then it got bogged down. Because then you started talking about Warren, you started talking about, I got to be honest, I was kind of scared with the Ryan Romney position. Because I truly think they want to put troops all over the world. They want to be in all of these countries. They want to do that stuff. Or they don't know that what they're talking about could lead to that. Because I think what the administration has done in Iran, historic. When you talk about most of the entire world backing the sanctions, most of the entire world behind what we're doing there, and the sanctions that are working, because as their economy is falling, there's going to be pressure. But, you know, here again, they stick to their talking points. Because even when he was wrong, he still stuck to his talking points. Even when he got slapped down, still stuck to the talking points. Oh, well. I can't wait to see the Spin Masters tomorrow. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this with Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
For the homeless, for the poor, who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter. Earth, sky.
In a beehive, there's usually just one queen. What happens when the queen dies? Can she be replaced?
When a bee colony loses a queen, say she's accidentally killed, the worker bees notice the absence of a chemical the queen produces, a pheromone. In response to the absence of the queen's scent, the workers begin a process of emergency queen rearing. They start building queen-size rearing chambers for about 10 to 20 young.
Queen is dying of old age. As she ages, the queen produces fewer pheromones. The decline in pheromone concentration signals to the workers to start building queen-sized cells in the hive. The queen herself lays the eggs of her potential bee princesses into these cells.
Ordinarily, these eggs would hatch into female larvae who would grow up as workers. But since they're inside-oriented cells, the workers know to feed these bee princesses a special food called royal jelly. This diet creates a fertile queen rather than a sterile worker.
The first queen to emerge from her cell as an adult will sting the other developing queens to death in their cells before they hatch. If two should emerge at the same time, then the rival queens will have a battle to the death. For more, come to EarthSky.org and search for Queen Bee.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at EarthSky.org.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Well, you know, it wasn't that bad. I think Ryan got his clock clean, but not that bad. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I've got Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service, on the line from Debate Central. Justin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So did it look, was it up close and personal where you were? Did it look like as much of a butt-kicking as it looked like from where I was sitting?
Well, I was in a media filing center, and there was certainly a lot more energy than the night that we had Romney and Obama going at it. With that, it was pretty clear within the first 30 minutes that, Obama was going to end up the loser of that one, and that the headlines the next day were going to be Romney the victor. With this one, however, the hour and a half seemed to fly by, and that seems to be the consensus of a lot of people in the media. There are a lot of calls for Biden and Paul Ryan did it in the next two debates as well, since there was really never a dull moment in that. So there's certainly a lot more waking. As far as who won, that still remains to be seen. Right now, it's sort of an inconclusive ending. It certainly fared better for the Democrats than last week's performance.
Yeah, I got to be honest. And looking at it from where I sat, and I try to be open-minded and fair and I said the presidential debate, Obama, didn't show up. I mean, he got his hat handed to him. This one I saw going the other way because, Biden looked on top of his game. He looked sharp. He looked wide-eyed. He wasn't going to take any nonsense. And Ryan just looked to me like he wasn't really prepared.
Yeah, and you have to understand what Biden was doing going into this. You know, he knew that he had to re-energize a very deflated base, and I think he did just that. He gave a lot of bait to Democrats who had been really sort of reeling following last week's speech, and really kind of made them feel like they had the upper hand at least once more time. You know, whether or not it was a good strategy remains to be seen. You know, he did it with, you know, some pretty considerable risk. You know, there was definitely some concern tonight, and there still is. We haven't quite seen any definitive polling yet that maybe he had gone a little bit too far with the smirking and the laughing, even though a lot of stuff, you know, as a lot of Democrats pointed out tonight, was pretty laughable. You know, there's still the TV audience, and it's not quite sure yet whether or not they found that to be condescending or if they found that to be, you know, as enjoyable as a lot of, you know, more decidedly liberal Americans did.
Yeah, that's a good point. We will see what happens tomorrow. What's the reaction tonight from the Republican camp? I saw unhinged. I saw rude. And generally when I see that kind of a reaction from, it doesn't matter who, when you see that, wow, he was rude. He was a bully. You know, he was unhinged. That's generally the side that lost.
Exactly. You know, they were really going after that pretty heavily. I spoke to a number of Republicans. Jeb Hensarling, the head of the GOP conference, said that it wasn't clear if Biden wanted to giggle or scream, but he sure wanted to interrupt. I talked to Aaron Schock, who was one of the youngest members of Congress, if not the youngest, and he pointed out that although Ryan was considerably younger, he said that he acted like more of an adult than Biden did throughout the entire evening. I thought that was a pretty funny criticism. But yeah, that seems to be the basic Republican argument about this, that Biden came off as somebody who was sort of immature and sort of acting beneath the level of the vice presidency. You know, there was also, some assertions that Biden did not have his facts straight on a lot of the Libya stuff. We know that he pretty much right off the bat said that the administration did not receive a request from, the Benghazi consulate for additional security. That, for all intents and purposes, has been demonstrably, false. And we saw some Republicans really bringing that up tonight as evidence that Biden did not have full control of the facts. But that seems to be the bulk of it. And both sides, of course, are playing it their way. But just in an overall sense, Republicans are less joyful than they were on last Wednesday night. I remember seeing Marco Rubio afterwards, and he seemed to be almost literally jumping for joy. And we did not see that kind of a reaction tonight.
So the Democratic strategist and the people that you're talking to there, what's their reaction? How are they spinning his performance?
They're saying that Ryan essentially did not really move forward with the plan. They are criticizing him for not being able to give specifics on the tax plan, even though he was given a pretty strong chance to. They are saying that there's a lot of defense of Biden going on. You know, I spoke to Dick Durbin, and he said that was just Biden being Biden, and anybody who knows Biden knows that he wears his heart in his sleeve. I talked to Jim Messina, the campaign manager for Obama, and he actually said that Biden acted exactly how he wanted to. He said that he really needed a strong defender of the middle class this evening, and that's exactly what Biden was in his mind. So they are, feeling pretty confident. I also asked Messina if this is, what's needed to get the momentum back on the Democrat side. He wasn't as willing to, jump on that and guarantee that. While this may not be a definitive movement in the race, I think this, will, certainly give more of an illusion that, the Obama campaign has some spring in the step, and it is just in the tailspin that we saw last week.
And talking to folks, the Jack Kennedy line where, Biden chimed in, what are you, Jack Kennedy now? Do you think that was planned, or if they brought up the tax reform bills, do you think that was planned, or is that just something off the cuff?
It seemed like it was something that was off the cuff. I think it was something that was planned. He may have, timed it a little better and maybe made that a bit more emphatic. But that certainly was a gutsy line from Biden. I'm not sure if it really had its desired effect. But it was sort of a burn moment, I suppose.
Yeah, and the whole malarkey thing, because I liked the one quote where he goes, not a single thing he said is accurate. Not a single thing.
I mean, Biden may have used hyperbole quite a bit, but we saw some colorful language, malarkey, blustering, and
stuff,
which was a pretty fun euphemism.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. You're full of stuff, full of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty pretty good night. There was a lot less you know, stuffy for Biden than it was for Obama last week.
So in the first debate, in the first Obama-Romney debate, you know, they went after Jim Lehrer. Any criticism of the moderator tonight?
You know, I saw a little bit on Twitter, and you know, there was some fear, or there's some concern that maybe she was a little too you know, soft on Biden interrupting. I spoke to some Republicans afterwards in the spin room, and they seemed a little caught off guard by the question. They, for the most part, believed that Raddatz did the best that she could against, you know, what seems like a pretty, as I cast it, a very hostile Biden. I frankly think she did pretty well. She seemed to really go after both.
Yep.
And at times, though, it seemed like nothing could really stop Biden from steamrolling through the conversation. And I wouldn't necessarily blame that on bias. I would blame that on a very highly caffeinated and very active vice president.
Yeah, but you know, here again, I thought her questions were pretty good, and I thought she, you know, she delved into some spots that you didn't think were going to happen. I wish she would have asked about trade. I wish she would have asked about China. I wish they'd have gotten into more of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be questions that you know, people wish were asked, but you know, there were a lot of things here that were not discussed last time around. Abortion, you know, obviously all the foreign policy questions and that didn't really come up. And, you know, just a lot of issues like that, you know, mostly abortion, which is really going to be the soundbite that's going to be focused on a lot tomorrow. So we did see some questions that weren't really expected. And we saw some, you know, pretty tough questioning coming from, you know, from Martha Raddatz.
Now, have you gotten any of the reaction from the people who are in the audience, not the pundits, not, but the people who are there watching?
No, I have not. I'm not sure how that came across to them.
No, so you're sequestered in the media room then?
Pretty much, yeah. I guess we could probably go outside and chase them, but, you know, we live in a twisted world where we want to hear more from Martin O'Malley and such.
Yeah, and what's Martin saying today?
Martin actually, Governor O'Malley said today that, frankly, Paul Ryan did not really come across as somebody who would be willing to assume the presidency in a heartbeat. That was probably the boldest statement that I heard from him tonight. He was sort of whisked away shortly after he said that, but he, you know, gave a pretty pretty strong defense of Biden.
And what are the Republicans saying to, you know, to Biden going after Romney, Ryan and Romney over their Iran policy? Because I got to be honest, the more I read about this, the more I look at it, I think they've done a really good job on Iran. I don't know that you really want to get into a situation where you're being pulled into a war.
Well, I mean, there were certainly a lot of concessions. You know, we saw that on a lot of the issues, there wasn't as much daylight as the Romney campaign would like you to believe that there is. You know, the sanctions on Iran did not really have a strong defense from, you know, Ryan, nor did what would really separate them on Afghanistan. A lot of it just seemed to be sort of, you know, probably to sum it up best is we agree on the same thing, but we would talk about it differently. And I don't think that was really an argument that is very convincing to a lot of Americans who you know, really just want to buy that.
Yeah. So looking at this debate, I mean, this is the number two debate. I mean, this is the vice presidential thing. Very rarely is it going to make that big of a difference, I think, in the overall, because it's still about the, you know, the top guys. How much do you think? How much play? How much movement do you think is going to come out of this, if any?
I'm sorry. One more time.
How much movement do you think is going to happen in the polls because of this debate, if any? Because after all, this is the number two debate. This isn't the main event.
No, it's not. And this was certainly less widely watched. I think we're going to see a lot of Democrats return to the fold. I don't think we're going to see many, you know, minds change when it comes to independents. But I think this will make those who, you know, were sort of angry at Obama for last week's, you know, performance feel good about being Democrats again. You know, watching Biden, it kind of felt a little bit like Bill Clinton during the convention speech. That really helped Obama, and maybe this will have the same effect. Although, again, it was not as you know, widely watched.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. In watching it, it just solidified my like for Joe Biden. I've liked him for years. I think he's a good guy. I think he's somebody who I trust fighting for the middle class. Paul Ryan to me just didn't seem didn't garner that trust with me.
No, I mean, that's you know, something I you know, would have expected from you. But no, certainly did. He certainly gave a lot of, you know, a lot of ammunition for, you know, those who are progressives and those who are, you know, more populist. And that is exactly what Biden was going for. That was his mission tonight. He had to, really re-energized and make people feel good again. And in that sense, it was mission accomplished.
So last question I've got for you, and looking at the fact-checking that will no doubt go on between, you know, to now and the next day or two, where do you think the scales tip? Who was the Pinocchio in all this?
I think both people squirted around pretty well. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. I think both sides in this sort of, you know, new age are going to claim that the other team lied more. I think the ones that really stood out more are probably going to be attributed to Ryan. That's just sort of the nature of the beast.
Yeah, we shall see. Justin, I appreciate the time. Thanks for checking in with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Justin Duckin, Talk Radio News Service. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The greed and corruption are very well known. On a consumer code of silence is what they defend. We know it, so let's don't pretend. You and me know it, so let's don't pretend.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Also, you can listen via the TuneIn app as well. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can always email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Today, back in 2008, and this is one of those things where I go, really? Someone did this? Guy named Luke Kostermans, Belgian, got into a borrowed Lamborghini Gallardo. 192 miles an hour, set a land speed record for a guy who's blind. Evidently, in this car, accompanied with a bunch of sophisticated navigational equipment and a human co-pilot. And I'm going, you know, hold on. If you're the human co-pilot, do you want to be driving down the road with a blind guy doing 192 miles an hour? Evidently, yes, because they broke the land speed record for blind drivers. Wow. And speaking of blind, I mean, what I saw tonight, absolutely, positively, the first half hour was just, I don't know what happened to Ryan. I thought he'd be a much better debater. Got his hat handed to him. And some of the early fact-checking in has come, you know, and Ryan seems to be the guy who's going to be shoveling the biggest load, or the biggest load of stuff, if you will. The reformer thing, you know, as he kept saying, you know, well, you know, they're talking about, you know, this guy being this grand reformer, which, you know, They never said. And in fact, the fact checkers have come out and said, well, no, that's not quite accurate. And, you know, I think a lot of things kind of stuck out in my mind. Ryan said we should have spoken out right away when the Green Revolution was up and starting. The mullahs in Iran were attacking their people. We should not have called Bashar Assad a reformer when he was turning his Russian-provided guns on his own people. And according to the one fact checker, said neither, you know, President Obama nor anyone else in his administration has ever considered the Syrian leader a reformer. And they said, you know, the often repeated charge stems from an interview Hillary Clinton gave in March of 2011 that noted that many of the members of Congress of both parties who have gone to Syria, you know, back then believe he's a reformer. But they didn't say that the administration thought that. But again, you know, it's a nice line, and he used it several times. And, you know, he also, you know, went after, you know, I love the line, you know, Mitt Romney's a car guy. Yeah, what do you mean by that? Yeah, he's a car guy. He's got a subterranean parking garage, so he's a car guy. He also wanted the auto industry to go belly up, of which the Obama administration did what they had to do to expand and to open up opportunities to keep those companies afloat, and in the process saved a boatload of jobs while doing it. Understand what their policies will bring us. More austerity, more collapse. It's that simple. You know, the let Detroit go bankrupt? What do you think would have happened to all of those jobs? What do you think would have happened to those industries? I mean, we've already allowed the Chinese to siphon off a good number of our auto parts jobs, which we should have been stopping from the beginning. You know, I remember when Delphi went down and they decided, well, we're going to move that over to China. I was screaming at the time, you cannot allow that to happen. You have to stop that. And one of my biggest disappointments in this whole debate was, you know, the trade policy thing. Because I think that that's the biggest issue of this election to me. It's one of the biggest issues. You want to get everything else stems from a jobs crisis. Everything else, our debt, Social Security, Medicare, everything stems from us not having full employment. And there are a bunch of reasons for that. You know, Ryan brought up the stimulus. Wow, the stimulus failed. No, it didn't. It created jobs. It did what most independent economists, thoughtful economists said it would do. Because it was limited, it was going to have a limited effect, but it was going to create jobs and it was going to help. Should have been bigger. But we had a Republican Party who, and you got to give Ryan credit. He said, wow, you know, the Democrats had all the power. And they did. And that was a failure of the Obama people for bothering to reach across the aisle and trying to be bipartisan. Me, personally, I would have steamrolled them. I said, you go sit over in the corner. We're going to fix your mess. Don't worry about it. We'll bring you along, but we got to fix what you guys screwed up. That's what I would have done. I wouldn't ask for their input because their input is going to be the same, especially when they come out and say, wow, we're going to make him a one-term president, and I hope he fails. So you know right from the beginning where their mindset is. You know, why reach out to him? But here again, this is what Obama is. He's a consensus builder. He's somebody who, you know, and I think it's a flaw, to be honest. This idea that we should be doing things in a bipartisan, no. You know, how can you work with people who want to see you destroyed? How can you work with people who pursue a scorched earth mentality? Who have a belief that, you know what, if we just give everything to the very top, something has eventually got to trickle down to us, right? That it's okay that, you know, the woman we talked to earlier in the hour, it's okay that her job shipped overseas and that of the 170 people who work at that Sensata Technologies plant. Well, it's okay. It's not okay. It's not okay what's happened to this country. It's not okay what's going on. And we need people who are going to stand up and say no and fight back. And I got to be honest, I like Joe Biden. I've liked him for a long time, and I thought he did a great job tonight. Was he forceful? Yeah, I think so. But he was right. And the more I look at this election, the more, you know, right now we're at that crossroads. You know, are we going to move full force, full bore towards conservative world where we give all of the power to the few who can afford it, all of the power to the few who have the resources to enforce it? Or are we going to do as my grandparents' generation did, expand opportunity? You know, I go back to the dependent thing. You know, that's very much in the Republican mindset. You know, anybody who needs help, well, they're dependent. And even working people who, you know, get a little bit every once in a while, somehow dependent. And I think Biden's right. You know, you listen to Ryan, you listen to Romney, you'd think this country was going to hell in a handbag. I mean, these are people who have not done us any favors. And when you hear, and I sat and I listened to them talk about foreign policy, and the more I listened to them argue, and the more I listened to Ryan keep throwing stuff out and thumping the chest and all of that, the more I said, you know, this isn't good for the globe to see. This isn't positive. This is showing us in a weak light. Don't you think? And I'm glad Biden brought up the 47% and the 30%. And I'm glad he brought up the foreclosure situation. Where, you know, I don't think Obama has done near enough. There should be much, much, much more being done. But what Romney has said he will do is nothing. Let them fail. Let them go bankrupt. Let them lose their homes. And let people like him, let the investor class come in and suck those properties up. And then, of course, rent them back. That's his plan. And for his ilk, that's a damn good plan. Because there's a lot of profit to be made there. And if we move towards that conservative worldview of complete and total unfettered free markets, get ready for that. Because that's a world of boom and bust. And the boom and bust happens to you and me. We're the ones who get sucked dry. We're the ones who get kicked from our homes. We're the ones who end up in the poorhouse. The folks at the top who can weather those fluctuations, they end up gaining more and more and more because they can take advantage of a good crisis when they create one. That simple. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are of the debate. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. That's how you can contact me. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, go to the website, get the podcast ticket with you. Also on your smartphone, Stitcher, Stitcher, Stitcher. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's color like the tide and flood beneath the blur sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain.